darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostradamus. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostradamus, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Yes, I am Lair Adams, and you are listening to the best in political professional wrestling, the American Adversaries Sunday Show on AM 660, The Answer. And we are smoking hot tonight, and hope you will inhale the truth. Now, will someone please tell me why Hillary would make a good president? I'm listening. Liberals think Billy Clinton was the best president ever, and the Hill have to be the second best. How did she do trying to get Hillary Care passed? She failed. And one of the results was the first Republican Congress in 40 years. Oops! Our host has things he would like to say about Ms. Clinton. But the station won't let him. Christopher Hart!
Thank you so much, Lair Adams, and thank you, everybody, for being with us tonight on this fine spring afternoon here in Central Florida. That's right, you are listening to the American Adversaries 3-hour Sunday evening classic tour as we leave on our 3-hour cruise. And we are coming to you once again very, very live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting Studios. Don't forget, for the very best in Mercury Free dental care, call my dentist, Dr. James E. Hardy, at 407-678-3399. And make sure you yank on his sleeve and ask him about his book, Mercury Free. Tell you all about why you need to get those quote-unquote silver fillings out of your head. All right, we're going to stuff some good stuff right back in your head tonight if you stay with us for the full 3 hours. And, of course, that was Lair Adams. I am Christopher Hart. In the studio tonight, we have, once again, our executive producer, Nostradamus.
Hi, everybody.
And Johnny Guns loaded up with some WTF news.
That is right. And we may even have a sing-along tonight for WTF news.
Oh, look boy. Out. Uh-huh. Look out. Well, if you want to see us sing as well as hear us sing, go to our Facebook page, American Adversaries on Facebook, and then we will see us where we're linked up to the head cam courtesy of Lucas Paris.
Hi, Lucas.
Hey. Yes.
And if you want to see what Lucas looks like, just aim the camera towards Dennis's head. Yes, there we go.
And I'm okay.
That's cruel.
See
reflection.
No. By the way, you can
quality paint right there.
Thank
guys.
You.
And
you
can communicate with Lucas as he's operating the head cam there. You can go to ustream.tv, of course, and dial in the American Adversaries channel and do the same. But just go to our Facebook page where we're linked up. Jeff Sinis is on the bridge tonight.
How you doing?
And so we are in good hands, and you are welcome to call us at any time. 407-774-8255 is the number. Keep that phone handy, because early in the second hour of the show, we're going to be doing our traditional Who Said That contest tonight, except it's not going to be traditional, because I'm going to make it a Why Is That contest. Why is that? So we'll be doing that in the second hour of the show, early on in the second hour, because during the second half of the second hour, we're going to have a guest on with us today, C.J. Pearson. Tell him who C.J. is, Nostradamus.
Yeah, you might have heard about him. He's a 12-year-old kid from Georgia. Found out later on he runs his own political organization. And it's not just limited to Georgia. It's all over the country, basically.
Well, maybe
and
he's we got, can get some sign-ups tonight.
He's got young kids all over the country. It's called Young Georgians in Government.
Yeah.
But it's got kids from Louisiana, from Mississippi, from California, who are all interested in governing at some point in the future. And he put up a Facebook post, YouTube post, talking, kind of defending Rudy Giuliani for saying that he believed that President Obama does not love America.
Right.
And he got criticized for that. Giuliani, of course, got criticized for the comments. Oh, and by the way, he's a black 12-year-old boy.
It's going to be a great interview.
It's going to be great.
I'm sure. And that'll be the second half of the second hour. Sunny, our California Glow Girl, is going to be with us tonight with some rather tragic news. The guy that started the Herbalife nutritional supplements, and has died a tragic death. And he was a close friend of Sonny's, so she wants to say a few words about her friend tonight. But we got a lot to do, and Carl won't be with us tonight. He is entertaining his family. The family's in from out of town, and they're spending some great quality time together. I believe they went to SeaWorld today.
Did you hear his show yesterday morning?
He was on fire.
He was.
He was on fire, buddy.
I could smell the sizzling in the studio. I wasn't even in the studio.
If you didn't hear his show, you can go to thecarljacksonshow.com where they archive it, and it was an excellent show. He was talking about how blacks can be racist. You know, it's interesting that a group of people would use the excuse that they can't be racist in order to be racist.
Yeah. That seems to be the standard operating procedure.
But in essence, that's what Carl was arguing against yesterday morning. It was an excellent show. You can catch him every Saturday morning right here on AM 660, The Answer, live at 8 o'clock.
He pointed out that racism is in your heart. Was really where the core of it was. He was correct on that
point.
It's
an attitude. Look it up in the dictionary. What the dictionary will tell you is, and I'm not reciting it word for word, and obviously dictionaries are going to have some variation, but in essence, racism is the belief that our cultural and educational, if you will, characteristics are determined by natural genetic, if you will, properties, and that one race may be superior to another. That's what racism is. All right? And it has nothing to do with power or control, or it's an attitude that your race is superior to other races or all other races.
Adolf Hitler was a racist.
Exactly.
He believed the Aryan race was the supreme race.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I would argue that in today's day and age,
Muslims are definitely racist.
Well, I would argue that in today's day and age, the diehard liberals are the ones who are racist, because in their heart of hearts, they believe that the black community can't do without them. I'm here to tell you, they're the worst thing that ever happened to the black community. I'm honest to God, I swear to you, I believe that, and this is a hard thing to say, but in many ways, not in every way, but in many, many ways, the black community was much better off under segregation, I'm sorry to tell you. And it's only because, not because we did away with segregation, but it's because how we did away with it. By letting the liberals take control of things. And look what they made a disaster out of the black community.
They replaced chains with the chains of entitlements.
At least under segregation, you had whole black families. You had low out-of-wedlock birth rates. You had high mortality rates amongst the newborn. You had low abortion rates. They educated themselves. And oh yes, they could sure enough do it. And they had rich black people, they had middle-class black people, and they had, guess what, poor black folk, too.
Yeah, but they didn't have freedom.
But
that's what segregation
means. I didn't say it every way, did I?
Yeah.
And in a way, they had more freedom in their own community than they're offered today. And that's by their own argument, because of the police harassment and the institutionalized racism in the police force. In many ways... And it's a sad thing to say, but it's a honest to God testimony to the effects of liberalism. The black community was better off under segregation.
That brings to mind the remarks last week from Stephen A. Smith. Carl mentioned it a little bit. Did you hear some of the things he was saying?
Yeah. Oh, I heard what Carl said.
Right. Basically, Stephen A. Smith said that he would just love to see just once every African-American voter in America vote for the Republican Party.
Yep.
Just to shake everybody up.
Right. Not because the Republicans are the answer to everything, but to let the Democratic Party know not to take them for granted, and that he realizes, and a lot of blacks, I believe, realize that the Democrats are not the solution. They've made things worse for them.
Look at Barack Obama. They are worse off under this president than they've been in a whole long time. Right? But it's okay, because it's Barack Obama and he's a Democrat.
Well, he's trying.
Well, I guarantee you that if the black community was to go in there instead of sucking up to him, say, listen, fella, you better get your act together because we need jobs. We don't need your rhetoric no more. We need work down there, okay? And did that and said, if you don't do it, we're going to go to the other side of the aisle and see what we can get over there.
And you know what? They will get something over there. First of all, foremost, they'll get respect.
Yep. And they'll get at least the time of day. But if nothing else, it would shake up the Democrats. It's just, it's utter political stupidity to blindly vote for one party all the time. I don't care who does it.
Sure.
And a lot of Republicans do it, too.
Oh, they just see the R at the end of the name. They don't do the research. They don't do their homework. They just go right down the line. And that is stupid.
Right. Which is why we do this show. We call it the American Adversaries. We like to take issue with anybody.
And every now and then, a Democrat has a good idea. Guess what? We'll call them out for it and say, hey, good idea.
Every day, you know, broken clock is right twice a day, you know.
That's right.
They say even blind squirrels can find a nut every now and then. So you just got to keep your eyes open all the time and don't take anything for granted. By the way, have you heard the news? Tomorrow we will have our first official presidential candidate.
Oh, yes. That's what they're saying. Look for the Cruz announcement.
Yeah, Cruz is going to cruise into the Liberty Council. I believe it. No, the Liberty College. Is it?
I think
where he's
so.
Going to be making the announcement.
We'll find out here in
the,
just a second.
One of the guys from Liberty College on our show a while back. Liberty University, Johnny's looking it up, but Ted Cruz is evidently going to make it official tomorrow and be the first announced candidate to get a jump on things, so to speak.
Yeah. Liberty University.
Liberty University.
Right, it became a university a couple years back.
Yeah, and so the announcement will come tomorrow, and he's off and running. And
well, the announcement will come tomorrow. Let's not assume. He might say, oh, no, there's lots of other guys out there. I think I'll step back and let someone else run.
I'd be pretty surprised.
That's not the Ted Cruz I know.
Nah.
No, he's going to be out there, and he's going to be bold. And we shall see how bold he's going to be.
And I wonder, will being first work to his advantage, or will it not work to his advantage because he'll be the first one that's going to get piled on and try to get picked off by the other side?
Well, and also you have a time span here, too, because Walker has kind of, he's already peaked, and he's already starting to float down a little bit, you know, and it's just the timing in politics. Chris has talked about it before.
Yeah, and oftentimes the front runners, you don't even remember them by the time the real debates begin. But we shall see. I think in this case it's because he's so determined. And oftentimes a very determined person can sort of force the issue, if you will. And if nothing else, that's the kind of guy I think Ted Cruz is.
You think he may, from this point on, force a lot of other candidates to declare as well?
Hillary. Anytime the first guy gets in, it does put pressure on everybody else to get moving.
And it will put pressure on Hillary because she's already talked about, claiming in April she's going to do it. But now maybe even sooner.
Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. That's right, you got us for our three-hour classic Sunday evening tour. And boy, it's going to speed right on by, too. I tell you, they always do. 407-774-8255 is the number. We just got a message from Eva. She didn't stay on the line, but we'll read the message here in just a moment. I want to remind you, though, that Tuesday is free Tune-Up Tuesday at Refresh Computers. If you guys got a laptop, a tablet, or computer, take it on over there to Refresh and let them tune that thing up for you. It'll be like brand new inside. And, of course, that's free at the Longwood store, which is on 434 between 1792 and Ronald Reagan Boulevard. If you want to call them over there, if you have a question about their Refresh Tuesday, Tune Up Tuesday, or anything else, the number is 407-478-8200, 407-478-8200. Make sure you tell David over there that you heard about it on the American Adversaries. We certainly appreciate it. We appreciate David Levitt and our sponsors because we can't do this without them. That is a fact. All right, 407-774-8255 is the number. Eva called to let us guys know that Liberty University has 20 million students, and somebody on Georgie Porgy Stephanopoulos' show called Ted Cruz a purist. Well, I wonder what their definition of purist is.
I was about to ask that, too.
If he's a pure conservative, I'll take it.
Yeah, almost sounds like a compliment out of Georgie's stuffing envelope.
Is he a constitutional purist?
Exactly.
Which we also agree with.
I would say, yeah, to both of those things, absolutely. And his father describes him as a man of principle. You know, it's about time we give Raphael a call, see if we can get him back on the show, especially now that Ted is declaring. Purists maybe, and that's what we need. I mean, that's what Barack Obama is, you know, and that's where I want to transition this discussion into. I want to talk presidential politics for the next couple of segments. Since Carl won't be here tonight, we'll push Nostradamus' past back a little bit, even further.
In the past. Into the future, actually.
Something like that. I don't know whether it's daylight savings time
at all. We'll hear it yesterday.
You know, Sonny Contact calls me and says, you know, now that you guys are back on daylight savings time, is it 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock?
Because in Arizona, they don't do daylight savings.
And I'm sitting there going, well, it's one or the other. But anyway, for the GOP presidential candidate, the purist is a perfect transition for me. See, sometimes divine intervention's at work. Thank you, Eva.
It works.
Because I think we need a purist.
How do you clean up a dirty spill? Not with a dirty sponge.
You need a clean one.
Right.
You need a pure one in that sense. And be honest with you, I think Barack Obama has shown us the way. Remember on the first show I said I'd kiss him for various reasons?
You keep going back to that, Chris. I think you really want
to.
You
got an obsession with this guy.
It's becoming
a fetish.
That's it, yeah. But no tongues, remember. But he's a purist. If nothing else, he's a purist, and he's going to do. It's you, weak of heart and weak of mind and weak of soul. Be damned! I'm going to be the purist, and if you don't like it, so what? Do something about it. And by golly, it's about time we had a Republican like that. Not only as a candidate, but when they get elected to office.
One thing to run that way, it's another to govern that way.
Exactly, and we should be putting specific questions to these candidates, like. When you are elected president, will you take the lead from President Obama and use the executive order slash action power that he has now made a part of the institution of the executive branch to repeal pretty much everything he has done? But not only that, but to put an immediate moratorium on all new federal regulations being implemented so that a complete overhaul and review can be implemented in its place. Why shouldn't we ask for this? Why shouldn't we demand it? And if we get a weak of heart like Jeb, who wants to be nice with everybody, when we say, well, we're going to kick your butt to the curb there, sonny boy. We want a purist. We want somebody who's going to come in and do what Barack Obama does, what I'm going to call blue face politics. You know what blue face politics is?
I can't wait to hear this. Mm.
You talk until you're blue in the face. President Obama is constantly out there making his case and his argument. Now, we may ridicule his arguments. We may call it, you know, making up these straw men and knocking them down. But at least he's out there, by God Almighty, doing it. And that's why they control the debate. That's why they control the results. Because they're out there making the argument. It's absurd most of the time, but you gotta admire their gall for doing it.
And the more you make an argument, even a flawed one, the more people start to believe it.
If you study logic, you know that an argument with all the premises that are false and the conclusion is true is, quote-unquote, a valid argument. It may not be a sound argument, but it is a valid argument. And in that sense, carries persuasion with it. When all the premises are false, and the conclusion is true, or the reverse. When all the premises are true and the conclusion is false. You can use the power of language to further your goals. This is what George W. Bush never did. He never gave, you know, he wouldn't stoop so low as to be on the Tonight Show or something like that. Barack Obama, there is no audience that this man leaves untouched, is there? Can you name one? that he hasn't gone in front of to make his case?
The Young Republican clubs.
Well,
yeah, he hasn't been there.
Well, great.
He went on O'Reilly, and you know he crossed over.
He goes places.
Yep.
You know, and even Clinton didn't do this. And that's what we need. That's what we should demand. We should demand not only a president who's going to act in our best interests, but then is going to go out there and make the case for it. So, that they go hand in hand.
So Ted Cruz appearing before the next NAACP meeting would be a big, big mark for him.
And him being on that comedy show with the guy, was it Seth or whatever his name is?
Well, John Stewart, and now who took over for Stewart?
Stewart hasn't retired yet.
All right,
not yet.
He was on some other fellow, some skinny, geeky-looking guy.
Colbert?
No, it wasn't Colbert. It was...
Might have been Seth Meyers.
I believe it was somebody like that. Anyway, he went on there, you know, and to make the next president... has got to break the same ground that Barack Obama has. He's got to trample, I should say, the same ground that Barack Obama has trampled and make the case the other way. Otherwise, he will be a one-term president because Barack Obama is going to be hovering out there. He's not going to go away. He's going to be very much involved in politics worldwide and domestically in his own way. And the next president is obviously going to have to deal with a hostile media and a hostile Democratic Party. And he needs to accept that challenge willingly and as an opportunity. Not something to bemoan, but something to take advantage of. Now, Larry, you were a wrestler in high school, weren't you? All right, well, when some guy's coming after you and he's getting ready to throw a move on you, what do you try to do? You counter the move, don't you? You try to use his momentum against him.
Do that and look for his weak points.
Exactly. And that's what the Republicans have been so very, very bad about.
That's the key of most martial arts, is to use your opponent's weight against him as leverage.
And momentum. And that's what the next president, that's what we should be demanding of the next president. And right now, as far as the purists go, yeah, Ted Cruz, I think, fits that bill. Now, obviously, he's got to get elected. But I think that the more conservative that he is, the better chance he will have to get elected. If for no other reason, that if they can make the case, and once again, perhaps this is why George Bush was more or less reluctant to do it, because he wasn't the best of debaters. He was an honest, genuine guy, but at the end of the day,
He was never glib.
Yeah, and the next guy's got to have some glibness to him. It's because Barack Obama, even after he's gone, his legacy is going to stink up the place for quite a while. You know, I've thought about doing a study of this in college that, the effectiveness of presidential policies while they're in office as opposed to after the 8 years, after they've left office. It's really those 8 years after they've left office that you really see the residual effects of their policy making and how they governed.
It's kind of like walking into a men's room and wondering, what died in here? 8 years of that.
Or walking into a garden and going, wow, who planted this?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's what you'd say after Reagan's presidency, right? Who planted this? And there was Bill Clinton there plucking all the fruit out of the trees saying, look at what I did. Look at what I did.
Look, it's an apple.
Yeah.
Isn't that ironic?
He didn't blame anywhere near as much on the last guy, did he?
Yeah, well, no, but he took credit for what the last guys did.
Yeah.
You see, it was the reverse with him. But in a lot of ways, George Bush made some lasting decisions that Barack Obama has had to deal with. Unfortunately, he dealt with them in the wrong fashion and prolonged the suffering rather than relieved it. For instance, when he first came to office, if he'd have turned right around that first day and say, well, do like Clinton did. He goes in, he comes out of a meeting and says, it's a lot worse than I thought, and we're going to have to take drastic action. Right now is not the time to talk about raising, repealing the Bush tax cuts. Maybe, in fact, now is the time to make them permanent. And now is not the time to borrow a lot of money to stimulate the economy. Now is the time to get out of the way of the economy. The economy would have boomed. He'd have been considered a great president. But that's not what he knew to do. And so we're gonna be feeling the effects for some time. So the next president had better be prepared to make the case. Otherwise, guess who's going to get blamed for all the problems in his administration that Barack Obama has created? He will. He's got to be willing to be like Barack Obama and say, oh, yeah? Don't you remember when Barack Obama passed the so-called the Affordable Care Act,
yes.
And we warned that it was going to do this, and that?
And he told you could keep your doctor and your insurance company.
And he told it would bring the cost of medical care down and all these other things that it's not going to do. He better be prepared to lay it right at the President Obama's feet and not be standing there saying, well, we got to be a healing nation and move forward now. That is not going to heal us doing it that way.
When they bring up all the problems of the past and then tell you, oh, no, we have to forget the problems of the past when it's our problems.
Yeah. Sometimes medicine is bitter, but medicine will heal me. All right? So we need to take some pretty harsh medicine to heal Obamanomics.
A cod liver ale president. I can't wait.
Gin helps.
With blue face politics.
Welcome back to the American Adversaries, ladies and gentlemen. We have the best listeners in the whole entire world, and you can give us a call and talk to us at 407-774-8255, like Eva did. But we do have to make one small correction to what Eva said. She said that she told us that when she called in, that Liberty University, where Ted Cruz is going to make his announcement. Tomorrow that they have 20 million students, which seems just a tad bit high. Mm-hmm. So I went to Liberty University, and according to their website, their enrollment is approximately 100,000 students. So
all right. Okay. So but they have a lot of followers on Facebook and
not
stuff
20
like
million.
That. But no. As a matter of fact, I'd like to have their numbers, though.
Amen.
All right. So anyway. He will be making the announcement tomorrow. We do need a purist, and maybe he's the guy, maybe not. We shall see. But we should be demanding something better than what we've gotten in the past, with the exception perhaps of Ronald Reagan. We should definitely be demanding that this president not be afraid to take advantage of what President Obama has done, if for no other reason than to show them that this is what happens when you sit back and you allow someone, even if it's from your own party, to run the show. We're going to run the show for a while now. You know,
sit in the back seat and shut up.
Yeah.
So we're driving the bus.
Yeah. And after seeing Rick Santorum last week, he strikes me as a guy that maybe that fits that bill. I think Ted Cruz definitely does. Santorum might. He showed a lot of promise. Huckabee, I don't know.
He didn't wow you like Santorum did?
Yes, like I say, he did. I mean, you didn't hear the show last week. As a matter of fact, I was a bit more impressed with Huckabee than I had been, and because he's got great communication skills. He has been a governor, but I was reminded, that he had done some things as governor that will be held against him, raising taxes and that. But he did, turn that state around, and he did make that state, he did leave that state a whole lot better off than he found it. So, but I think Huckabee's a possibility. Huckabee's a possibility. A question I asked him in the interview was, one of the big knocks against him, you heard it, is, he's too nice a guy.
Yep.
And he responded that he can throw the elbows or he can do the hard things.
Well, just his experience as governor in Arkansas.
Right.
He's been a leader.
They nailed his door shut when he was lieutenant governor because they don't operate on the same, single ticket.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. We talked about that. Yeah.
Well, guys, too, think about this, Chris. Can you think of any time in recent history that both parties have really kind of lost control? I mean, always before the party led who people were going to vote for. The party kind of gave you who you're going to vote for.
And
in this one, both parties are stymied.
Well, that's because a lot of that has to do with the loosening of the campaign finance laws. It used to be that the parties controlled 95% of the money. And so you had to work with the party. You had to work through the party. It was easier for the party to discipline you. Today, it's not that way. It's a lot easier, if you will, for them to get outside money. And there's a lot of richer guys who run for office, too, that can finance a big part of their campaign. But it's so there's a lot less party loyalty there, a lot less control. So it takes more in the terms of real leadership and persuasion than back, mm-hmm. Backroom arm twisting.
I still believe, though, that the candidates who end up winning the primaries, they are selected by the powers that be. I think most voters don't have a chance to cast their vote for someone who's got a chance of winning.
All right. Well, this election would be a good test of that because the powers that be want Jeb Bush.
Right.
All right. We know that. Barring him, they would probably go for a guy like Walker. But we have a lot of other good guys like Ted Cruz.
We've got about a dozen
to choose from. Yeah. All right. And we've talked about this on the show before. There's more ways than one to support your candidate. The voting is just, that's the last thing you can do to help your candidate, right? That's the end of the line. Early on, like right now, like tomorrow, if you like Ted Cruz and you got an extra $5 laying around, you need to put it in an envelope and send it to Ted Cruz. That is also how the candidates are selected, by the amount of money that they raise. That's a form of voting. That's the way the Supreme Court sees it. It's a form of expression. You are voting your preference with your pocketbook.
And the ones who are not getting popularity, they end up getting win out because they can't afford to continue.
Yeah, that's right. And they can be the better candidates, like you've supported Duncan Hunter a few
sure
years
did.
Back. He was the most conservative guy
yep.
in that field. What year was that?
And I was 2008.
All right. He was yep. the most conservative guy in the field, and he didn't make it very far.
The only thing he was missing, he had the ideas. He even had a great personality. All he was missing was $50 or $60 million.
Because there was a lot of people out there sitting around thinking, well, all the big money's going over here, or it's out of my control right now. This is why I say, you know, there's more things to do to help candidates than vote. You can also volunteer if you don't have any money.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You can go out there
sure.
and use your knowledge and use your persuasive skills.
Right. And a lot of people who put money behind a candidate aren't picking the candidate they like the best. I heard a lot of people behind the scenes say, you know, I'm on board with Romney. He's my guy. But, you know, Duncan Hunter's really good. He'd be my second choice.
Yeah.
When you say that and don't back it up with dollars, you end up throwing your money behind who you think's going to win. A lot of people vote that way, too.
Yeah. Well, that's a large part of the deal. You've
yeah.
got to be able to win. I don't care what your message is. If you don't do it well enough to attract people to it, you're not going to win.
Well, that's true. But all of those dynamics come into play, and they should, because that's our best chance of getting the best person in the end. And this is why Democrats, you know, they're quaking in their boots over Hillary's coronation, because they want, I mean, the Boston Globe, now, of course, Warren's from Massachusetts, but the Boston Globe came out today with a big editorial, run, please run, big photograph of Lizzie Borden Warren.
And why do they hate Native Americans so much?
Especially blonde ones.
And what they're worried about is Hillary Clinton, skating to a victory and basically being her dumb, bumbling self as she was in that
being
press
the dog
conference.
In their,
I mean, let's
pony
face
show.
It, she was a bumbling fool the other day. There's no other way to describe her performance trying to explain those emails. I mean, the stupidity of her reasoning and her explanations would be, you know, enough to make a fifth grader blush, because they would know so much more than that.
When she talks, her numbers go down.
Exactly.
That's seriously. Every time she talks and opens her mouth.
Which is why she doesn't want any primary opponent. And which is why all the focus of her campaign will be not on her, but on her opponent. Having said that, I would say that don't be distracted by Hillary. She is a big distraction in two ways. One way, you are not going to win a toe-to-toe argument with Hillary Clinton on her terms. Okay, it'll be like that guy in New York, what was his name, running against her in the Senate, and he dared actually walk over to her podium. What was his name?
And that showed he was aggressive.
Right. What was his name?
Yeah.
Labutier?
He invaded her private space,
right.
You see.
He offended her.
She threatened
her.
She needs to essentially be ignored by the Republicans starting now. I mean, when I say Republicans, I mean Republican presidential candidates. I do not mean the Republicans in Congress who need to be investigating her. They need to be giving her a colonoscopy, all right? And, yeah, we do want to see all the emails, as a matter of fact. Yeah, all of them.
Even the ones about the funeral plans for
Even
her,
the
her
ones about the funeral
and
plans.
The
and you know why?
Wedding
because
things?
She mixed them all up. Rick Lazio, thank you there, Johnny.
There you go.
Rick Lazio was the one who dared violate Hillary's space, and he can never live that down.
And he is now out of politics.
And he's now out of politics. So you don't, you know, just ignore her. She's not worthy of trying to argue. It's like Limbaugh says, you know, when you argue with an idiot, after a while, nobody can tell the difference.
That was the title of a Glenn Beck book.
Yeah.
Who's stupider?
Yes.
The idiot or the one trying to reason with
it? And when they try to put the question to you, oh, yeah, but what about Hillary Clinton? What is your opinion about Hillary? Well, you know, she has her opinions, but here's my opinion about what needs to be done. And you immediately take control of the doggone argument. Why is it so hard for Republicans to do that? Why? You don't get drawn into that stuff. You marginalize Hillary Clinton. And I'm here to tell you, if you spend too much time on her now, it may be wasted time and resources. She may be the ultimate distraction.
She might be the lightning rod that draws everyone's attention away from who they really want to run, whoever that is.
You got it, my friend. And to use her just like they used her with Barack Obama to parry off of her and say, look, we got something even better than that. Right? And that's essentially what the Boston Globe was saying today. Run, Lizzie, run, so that we can demonstrate we can have something better than Hillary Clinton. Just like we got with Barry Hussein Obama. Right? See, he was the viable alternative to Hillary Clinton, who is the presumed, you know, nominee.
So are we effectively saying that they're using Hillary Clinton like enhancement talent? You can always use her to put over a stronger candidate?
Politics is like professional wrestling, and that's what Lucas is talking about.
Because that's what Hillary Clinton is. She never actually wins. She just looks good enough to make another person look better.
You got it, my friend. You got it.
She's the plain girl next to the hot girl at the bar.
Right.
That's what she is.
Sure enough. Exactly. And right now, the hot girl is little Lizzie Warren.
Hey, who's your friend, honey?
That's the way the game is played. And the Republicans just walk right into it every doggone time. Marginalize Hillary Clinton. And if it's not Hillary Clinton, marginalize whoever it is. Because once you begin to enter into the debate with them, you've already lost. You have already lost. You brush them aside, and then you make your case over and over until you're blue in the face.
Otherwise, you're just running across the ring, getting headbutted by a 619 by Rey Mysterio. Too soon?
Too soon.
All right, we'll go ahead and take the break. When we come back, we'll have Nostradamus's stories from the past. Don't forget, though, folks, you know, the summer's coming on. You're going to need some Roxy Pacifics if you're out in the sun too long, those bug bites, whatever ails your skin, inside or out. Fixtheskin.com is where you can find this stuff. And if you're on watching the head cam, you can see that I'm holding up one of the 8-ounce bottles. You order this, you'll get the 1-ounce bottle free.
Free.
And free shipping.
Free shipping, too.
And you can use this stuff literally anywhere you can spray it. On your body, on your children, on your spouse.
On your pets.
On your pets.
On someone else's spouse. You might get hit.
That might not be so safe, but you could do it.
Any skin problem, any throat problem, even your eyes can benefit from this.
Fixtheskin.com. Get some. And we love it that you are in our audience. And welcome back to the show. You got Lair Adams, Christopher Hart here, along with Johnny Guns, Nostradamus in the studio. Lucas Paris is in the studio with us up on the head cam.
Okay.
There you go. Jeff Sinis is on the bridge. Carl's not with us tonight. He's spending some quality time with his family. But guess what? Now it is normally time for Carl's Corner, but we pushed it back because now it's time for the stories from the past.
Nostradamus.
Yes.
Predicts.
Uh-huh.
The pass.
Yes, I do. Thank you, 5 Minute Professor. Yeah, these are the stories we...
By the way, how's he doing? Haven't seen him since your anniversary party.
And you know why? He and his lovely Lady Patty and their the little girl, Eliza, the 5 minute baby, are living out in Oviedo.
Careful how you say that.
Well, that's what he calls her. We didn't say anything about how long the conception took. She's the 5 minute baby, yes.
They move where?
They're out in Oviedo, so we hardly ever see them. Maybe about once a week instead of seeing them all the time.
Hopefully they're listening.
I hope so. Anyway, these are the stories we were going to cover this week, but somehow we never got around to because, we have great guests, we have wonderful conversation, we have incredible phone callers, and so sometimes they all bunch up like snow on the side of a road somewhere that's not Central Florida, and we come back to them on Sunday, kind of scoop them up and shove them out at you. Here's one from our friend Warren. Have you heard about this problem? According to United States Census records, have you heard that we have 6.5 million citizens here in the USA over the age of 112?
Oh, do we now?
Let me repeat that. 6.5 million citizens in the USA over 112 years old.
And half of them are members of the Square Dancing Society.
Swing your partner round and round.
Don't you
know? Don't swing your partner that much.
No, yeah.
Here's what happens. You know, Social Security numbers contain 9 digits. That means the most possible numbers you can have associated with names is a billion minus one. They have to reuse numbers. So when people die, they are replaced by new people with the same old number. As a result, people who are aware of these millions of available numbers are using these numbers to get past the E-Verify requirements. Warren tells me this story is getting overlooked, getting very little press. Not even SoundbiteRx.com is carrying it. So maybe we should get them to talk about it. But he found a story in the Valdosta Daily Times that talked about how big this problem is and how widespread it is. And our friend Ron Johnson from Wisconsin is one of the ones who is trying to get this problem cleaned up. In fact, on Monday...
Senator Ron Johnson.
Sorry. He is going to have a hearings in the Senate to try to get this whole thing cleaned up. Just like the voter rolls need to get cleaned up on a regular basis, so do the Social Security rolls.
Wow.
Also, Warren mentioned...
Valdosta Times?
The Valdosta Times, Valdosta, Georgia.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Also, he noticed this on Friday. He remembers hearing you talk about the vernal equinox?
Yes.
Did you know that there is also a venereal equinox? Yeah, on March 20th, you have a 50-50 chance of getting an STD from an OBT streetwalker. So there. Have you heard that President Obama Have you heard President Obama got called out by Wolfpack North Carolina State Guard Anthony Cat Barber? This isn't one of your... WTF stories, is it, Johnny?
No.
Well, apparently...
Yeah, you're talking about basketball players.
Yes, he is a basketball player. He's in March Madness. And
yeah,
he
as a matter of fact, they beat Villanova the other day, didn't they?
And that's exactly what happened. In the post-game interview, he was happy. He was laughing. It was a joke. He wasn't angry. He's a player. And Anthony Cat Barber was not pleased that the president picked Villanova to move on to the Sweet 16. So they're all celebrating, and he shouts out on live TV, "What the blank is wrong with Barack Obama?"
Now, that's what we spent 4.5 years talking about. Yeah.
Georgia State head coach Ron Hunter joked the same way.
Really?
He hopes Obama makes better decisions in office than he did when he picked Baylor to beat Georgia State. Now, you know that story.
No.
The coach's son made the game-winning shot a couple of games ago.
Yeah.
And he jumped up and pulled a hammy or tore a ligament or something.
Oh, yeah.
So he had a special rolling chair made so he could roll up and down the sidelines instead of pacing up and down them because he can't stand up. After they won that second game, he tried to jump up and fell over. So Georgia State's doing great, but their coach, Ron Hunter, is kind of teetering.
And Georgia State's out of the tournament now.
Yeah, but still, what a great two-day story.
They were doing great.
Yeah.
Well, what did that guy say again? What the
blank is wrong with a Barack Obama?
And here, I've just pulled this up. If you go search for it online, you can find the Vine of Inside the Locker Room, NC State Wolfpack. And you can see the gentleman that right there, number 12, saying, "What the is wrong with Barack Obama and his teammates jumping in enthusiasm right after he says it.
And he's black.
Yeah.
He's a black player.
If you think about it.
In case you're wondering.
You know, in politics, when candidates are vying for a primary position or whatever, a lot of them won't take stands on issues because they know those issues will come back to bite them and might hurt them before the primaries.
Right.
In essence, by filling out his March Madness bracket, what the president basically did was alienate 63 teams because he told all of them but one, you're not going to win. So he just annoyed people all around the country. I think he should fill out these brackets as often as possible.
Yeah, but they'll forgive him because he's better at it than Hillary Clinton. So. That's why he's president and she's not.
Chris, you are a tax professional.
Yes, indeed.
At least a semi-professional.
Yeah.
April 15th is only a couple of weeks away.
Indeed.
And a survey finds that nearly half of all Americans don't know that they are now required to declare on their tax returns whether they have health insurance. Even among those who already filed their returns, they were asked, did you file? Yes or no. And then they were asked, did you check the box that said you have health insurance?
Right.
If you don't check that box, you could get a fine. And a lot of people weren't sure whether they checked the box or not, whether they have insurance or not. So,
yeah. By the way, you can file a 1040X and make any corrections. But here's another, shall we say, rude awakening to tax filers this season. And that is, if you got a government subsidy to help you buy your insurance or that paid for it, all of it, that subsidy is now considered gross income.
So it's taxable.
And it goes to the bottom line, which is carried down through to the taxable amount. So yes.
So if you're in the 26% tax bracket, you're getting 26% of that, you're going to have to give back.
Well, no, you mean in terms of the subsidy.
Right.
Yeah. No, somebody who's in a high tax bracket is not getting the subsidy.
Okay.
So it's only affect people who are in the lower tax brackets who can't afford health insurance. They who are getting the subsidies, all that subsidy is now considered income. It's like you got a raise in your paycheck. Mm-hmm. You might think, well, no big deal. Yeah. But you get taxed according to that. So it is affecting a lot of people on a low income. They're either not getting the refunds, not getting all the refund that they thought they were going to get, or are owing money.
I'm glad you're a tax professional because I have no clue what that's all about. I let my guy handle it, and he knows what he's doing.
So. All right.
In California, we talked last week about California and water and how they've got tons of it up north, not so much of it down south.
Yeah, Jerry Brown was talking about this severe drought and maybe rationing coming this morning.
Well, diners in California, take note. If your server does not fill your water glass, it's not because he's forgetful. He's just following the law. There's a new law going into effect April 15th, but a lot of restaurants are starting to implement it now. That will make it against the law to serve water to customers unless the customers ask for it.
Right.
You can't even put out place settings with water glasses. When you do, many restaurants are using much smaller glasses. You get a little orange juice glass instead of a big glass.
Right.
And you could get fined up to $500 per day. So be careful. That water is really valuable.
Can you imagine they're going to hire some sucker or suckers to go around the restaurants and check on that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, considering, too, how much water is wasted, I mean, you know, to wash a person's car, that's not really a waste, but wash one car, that's way more water than this restaurant could serve to these people in little glasses of water.
Well,
I'm sorry.
Well, here's what's coming while we're on this, and we can do some more of these stories later, but you know how much it takes to grow a pound of almonds? Mm. 600 gallons of water.
Yeah, they are thirsty plants. Yeah.
Right, right. So why not jack up the price of almonds to reflect that?
Oh, now you gave him
a great idea.
Thanks
repeating
a lot,
their
Chris.
Idea. Yeah. All right, go ahead.
All right, one last one with a minute left. Dr. Guy Ringler is a board-certified physician in OBGYN. He's a partner with the California Fertility Partners. And he says that, theoretically, genetic research is advancing to the day when gay couples are not going to have to buy the argument that, well, you can't have children, you don't have the DNA for it. They could fulfill their dreams of having children related to them both by mixing the DNA of both male or both female members of the couples. Theoretically, he says, this could happen. It A lot of people are saying it's not a great idea.
Yeah, not a great idea. You don't want to talk about cloning.
Yeah, but how does a guy have a baby, Dennis?
Well, you still would have to have the egg, and the woman would still
have
to carry
it. You still have to have a surrogate mother.
But the DNA would be from two separate bowls of soup. They'd mix the soup.
Believe you me, there are feminist writers out there who long for the day when it can all be done in the laboratory.
They won't need men.
They won't need women. We'll be back.
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
That's right, it's supper time! American adversaries, not drive time, it's our Sunday night show tonight. But you know, at 6 o'clock, everybody's sitting around the table having supper, and we have to work. Oh well, somebody's got to do it. Lair Adams here with Nostra Dennis. With, what are you pointing at? Oh, your candy stuff over there. That's Lucas over here, the candy holic.
Some of those chocolate.
We're talking skinny people can eat fattening food. And we have Johnny Guns. He's a skinny guy. And then we have Christopher Hart. He's over here, too. He's Mr. Skinny, too.
So. Yeah, well, I got my peanut butter with raisin sandwich here. Oh, man, that's great.
That's ants on a log in a sandwich.
That's like a tuna fish milkshake. I don't know.
No, peanut butter and raisins, and banana.
What do you make jelly out of?
Throw a little honey on there, man.
Have taste buds?
Put some honey on there and you got something good.
My grandmother used to do cottage cheese and mustard in the microwave.
Wow. Yeah. See, Chris goes to McBlandles.
Cottage cheese, the only place cottage cheese belongs is on a saltine cracker.
Or insulation in the
Fritos,
roof.
Fritos,
he says.
Lucas got that.
I've never been a cottage cheese eater.
All right. We're gonna switch it up a little bit tonight, folks, because we do have a guest in the second half of this hour, C.J. Pearson. And he's the 12-year-old from Georgia who spoke up in defense of Rudy Giuliani when Giuliani spoke out saying that he didn't think the president loved America. And this kid gave the best defense of anybody. While Republicans were running away from Giuliani, this kid put it, you know, right out there. So he's going to be with us. This young man, I should say, is going to be with us for the second half of this hour. So we're going to go ahead and do our Who Said That, but tonight it's going to be a Why Is That contest right now. Real easy to play. Of course, this contest is sponsored by Cafe Positano, as is our Sunday night show, which is, of course, the finest Italian restaurant in all of Central Florida. We got a big announcement coming up this week about something we're going to be doing over at Cafe Positano in April, so you'll want to be listening up for that. But 407-774-8080 is the number at Cafe Positano, 4 miles west of I-4 on State Road 436. And, yes, we know that the Edgewater branch is being getting a restaurant makeover by one of those restaurant TV shows.
Are they really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
They taping that now?
I believe so. They changed the sign, changed the name, changing the menu. But it's still part of the Cafe Positano family. And we like to go to the one, the mother store, if you will, which is 4 miles west of I-4 on State Road 436. We'll be over there this week. And they have great specials over there all week long. Tuesday night is prime rib night. And you need to make a reservation, not necessarily for the table, but for the prime rib. If you're going on Tuesday night and you don't plan on going early, you better make a reservation.
They run out every Tuesday night, folks.
Yeah, along about 6:30, 7 o'clock. So you better make your reservations if you want that prime rib. And you can cut it with a spoon, I hear. 407-774-8080 is the number at Cafe Positano.
Interesting you call that the mother store. I'd call it the mothership because at one time Pasquale was a legal alien.
All right. And so if you get the answer to tonight's contest correct, you'll get a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano and a My Liberty Threads t-shirt, which are made in America with proud American slogans on them. MyLibertyThreads.com is where you can find out more about those. And, of course, you get coupons in our Intel briefs, which the second one will be coming out in about a week or so. We're putting it together right now. Nostradamus wrote a great article. Lucas has written something for it. Lair's going to put something in it. And I'm writing a story, you know, for the headline. So you'll definitely want to join our American Adversaries Army and take advantage of those coupons as well. Of course, you can do that by going to our website, AmericanAdversariesRadio.com, and enlisting there. Or you can do it through the mail, by sending your check or money order, $5 a month or $60 for the year, and you can break it up any way you want. Just send it to American Adversaries Radio, P.O. Box 536-683, Orlando 32853. Box 536-683, Orlando 32853. Just make the check or money order out to and address it to American Adversaries Radio.
Chris, will you give them a break if they go ahead and sign up for 100 years?
I'd like to think that the legacy of this show will be around, but hey, we can do something else. We can make it worth your while. Of course, we're always looking for sponsors too, and you can sign up as a sponsor through our website as well. All right. So tonight we're going to do a Why Is That contest. You know, this past week, Tuesday night, Bill Federer gave his talk, his presentation over at the Eastmont Civic Center for the Greater Orlando Tea Party. And it was an excellent talk. It went on for a couple of hours. After a while, he stopped and said, how am I doing? You guys want more? Are you ready to go home? And everybody said, more, you know. And so he talked for another half hour. It was very, very educational. And we're going to talk a little while this hour about what he said the other night. But I learned something the other night I was curious about but never just asked somebody. It was new to me. I'm sure it's going to be easy for a number of you out there. 407-774-8255 is the number. But why is it that Marines are called leathernecks? That's the question tonight. Why is it? Why is it that Marines, United States Marine Corps, you know, USMC, why are they called leathernecks?
Are we letting Marines chime in and answer?
If they haven't won here recently, yes. If you won in the last few weeks, try to let somebody else win.
Now, come on, guys. This could be sort of a fetish thing, you know? I don't want to embarrass anyone.
Why are Marines called leathernecks? And if you're a Marine, you can call up and claim those prizes. If you have a Marine in your family and you know the answer, call us. If you just happen to know, call us at 407-774-8255.
You know, it sounds a lot more manly than pearl necklace necks, you know?
Yeah.
Or tiara.
Easy does it. Easy does it. You go into that ZZ Top tune there. All right. Now, I want to talk about something that Bill Federer mentioned on our show last week, and he talked about it some in his speech Tuesday night, what he called the Hegelian dialectic. Hegel was a German philosopher, and he was, if you will, the predecessor to Marx, because he came up with a theory of how history works, and it's now known as the Hegelian dialectic. And if you remember, Bill Federer said it consists of a thesis, antithesis, and then synthesis. And according to Hegel, this is how history played out. You had a social order. You had those who were dissatisfied with that social order. The social order is the thesis. Those who are dissatisfied are the antithesis. They rise up. There is some sort of revolutionary force that develops out of that, and from that revolutionary force, you get an antithesis. Let's look at our own history, for instance. The thesis would have been British rule here in the colonies. The antithesis was the Declaration of Independence, which brought along a revolutionary force. There was a revolutionary war. Out of that, you got the synthesis, which is our government. This is the way Hegel said all of history works, and he likened it more to, in Western thought, we see history as linear, sort of like a number line. It started out with zero, and now we're at 2015, whatever you want to call it. Or it started out billions of years ago when the universe was formed, and then now we're 15 billion years later along this number line that goes sort of straight along. Hegel saw history more as a spiral. it would go around and round, and each time it would go around, you would start sort of at the middle of the spiral, and then you would be working your way outward as society developed. Okay, but nonetheless, it goes round and round from thesis to antithesis to synthesis, thesis to antithesis, and of course, the synthesis always then becomes the thesis.
The thesis.
The new thesis, mm-hmm. Okay? And so eventually, there will be forces rise up against it.
And when did he come up with this theory?
Hegel was, he was in the late 1700s, early 1800s, I believe.
That was before he was Secretary of Defense.
Yeah. H-E-G-E-L. Not H-A-G-E-L. H-E-G-E-L. And from Hegel's theory, Marx came along and said, hey, yeah, you're right. And here's how we can now categorize these societies. We started out as communist society. From there, we went to a monarchy. From there, we went to a mercantile society. From there, we went to capitalism. And from capitalism, we will go to socialism. And from socialism to communism. All of these things are thesis, antithesis, synthesis. Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. And there's a great deal of, let's just say, useful knowledge in looking at history that way, because it plays out before our very eyes. Like I said, our own revolution. Look at what just happened in Yemen. Okay, mm-hmm. We now found that we have totally pulled out of Yemen. Okay, no longer do we not only have diplomats there, we don't have any military personnel there, and probably pull out all of our CIA agents and close those station offices over there too. Why? Because they have just formed a new synthesis. Mm-hmm. Okay, you had the thesis, which was the Yemeni government, who we were working closely with to decimate al-Qaeda. And then you had the antithesis, which was the Iranians and ISIS both interjecting in there. And now we have a synthesis, which may not last long as a thesis of its own accord. But basically, we have now given Yemen over to the Iranians. The Houthis, mm-hmm. which are an arm mm-hmm. of the Iranian government, is now controlling Yemen.
Which I think Barack Obama is all for.
And except that he, you know, he claimed that was one of his great accomplishments in fighting al-Qaeda. We had decimated al-Qaeda, especially in Yemen, where it was the most virulent form of al-Qaeda. Well, that's so much for that, right? And when we come back from the break, I want to continue this further because this is happening in our very own country right now, purposefully by Barack Obama. Because what is in actuality a community organizer but the person who brings forth the antithesis, right? He's against the thesis, the society as it is. He's bringing forth the antithesis in anticipation of the synthesis. So we are now in the process of antithesis. And if we don't fight it back and hard, we ain't gonna like the synthesis. That's for sure. All right, why are Marines called leathernecks? I thought for sure we'd already have an answer. Why are Marines? Okay, we got some callers on the line. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. We're the American Adversaries. We're well into our second hour of the show, and it is flying by. Don't forget, at the end of this half hour, we'll have our guest for the next half hour of the show, C.J. Pearson. You definitely want to catch that. All right, we got a phone bank full of calls. We're going to take each and every one of their answers. And we're not going to say if it's right or not. So if you're on the line listening right now, we're going to take all of the answers and then reveal which one is correct. And if you all have the same answer, maybe it's all right or maybe you're all wrong. But we'll go down the line. I want to hear from each and every one of you your answer, and each and every one of you will win a prize. Okay? If you are correct.
John, did I win our contest at the break?
Well, it's going to be a round two.
Okay. Let's just put the contest forward. We were doing in the studio at the break was who can fit the most white cheddar popcorn in their mouth at the same time. And I think I won that. Not sure.
Well, people have to go to the head cam.
That's right.
By going to our Facebook page, American Adversaries, and they can see themselves who has the biggest mouth in
the
studio.
We'll let them declare the winner.
Oh, I know who can shove the most words in his mouth. All right, Jeff is working on getting all the names up on the screen for me. As soon as he gets all the names up, as I said, we'll go right down the line since there's a full phone bank. I want to see what all the answers are before we reveal the correct answer. Be interesting to see if everybody has it right or if everybody has it wrong. All right, so everybody who's on the line, stay on the line, and we will take your answer in the order that they come in. And Jeff is getting the names and organized for us now so that we can get them up on the line. By the way, folks, the contest tonight we're playing is the Why Is That contest. Why are Marines called Leathernecks? And as I said, Yemen has now been handed over to the scofflaws, basically Iran. And this president, of course, is still pushing for a deal with the Iranians.
Al-Qaeda, now the scofflaws. That's horrible.
It's a whole other nuke terrorist
group. Yes.
And then, of course, John Brennan was on TV this morning once again trying to make an excuse that these guys are not somehow working from the Muslim playbook. And they are. They're working straight from the Quran.
And there's no thoughts of giving the people of Yemen any kind of relief.
No. So, we pulled out. That's it.
So there will be no Yemen aid.
No Yemen aid. That's right. Dang. Thank you very much, Nostradamus. Maybe that's been part of the negotiations in Iran. You know, we'll give you this piece of territory
that joke was
here.
Sour.
We'll give you this piece of territory here if you'll be nice to us. But it has been surrendered. And as to get back to my point right before the break, I think this process is playing out right now. For one reason, because you know we are. It is, history is a living thing. It's not. In this sense, it's nothing like the Western ideal of it. History is the moment right now, and it is alive, and things change constantly. And in our society, things are constantly changing. That's why our society, that's why our form of government is so perfect. If you think about it, the adversarial form of government allows for the thesis, antithesis, synthesis, does it not? Right? The two parties represent the two sides. The one party arguing for the way things are, the other party arguing for the way things should be. And then from that comes legislation, ideally. But that's why our form of government mimics the natural law and mimics history. And believe me, our founding fathers were way ahead of Hegel and Marx in that sense, that they designed through inspiration from our Creator, a form of government that allows for the natural processes to play out organically within the society without having to destroy the society. The difference we're seeing now is Barack Obama wants to push the antithesis so far that he risks destroying the society.
Now, once you get to that antithesis point in history, have any societies ever been able to go back to their previous thesis? Or do they have to forge ahead and go through that whole cycle?
There has to be some sort of way to deal, some sort of accommodation. For instance, in the early part of the last century, when you had the rise of progressives and the Communist Party, you had people in industry who basically didn't necessarily see the unions as a bad thing because they were sort of the lesser of the antithesis, the lesser of the synthesis. Okay, you could have had communist forces in the government, or you can deal with the unions across the business table. Which would you rather prefer if you're a businessman?
An orderly,
right,
adversarial relationship. Sure.
Right. So the antithesis that Barack Obama is pushing is going to have to be dealt with. It's going to have to be dealt with. Oh, reopening the racial divide in this country and the racial wounds in this country cannot be ignored. And it will have to be dealt with in a new way by Republicans, a brand new way. All right, let's go to the lines now. And like I said, we're going to go down the line. I want to hear from all of you why Marines are called Leathernecks. Let's go to Darren. Darren, you're first up. Why do we call Marines Leathernecks, sir?
Good evening, guys. It came from the Continental Marines. It was a uniform standard. They wore a strap of leather, according to popular belief, to ward off saber blows, but it was actually a grooming standard. It kept their head nice and straight and their military bearing correct.
Now, are you a Marine?
I'm a combat wounded Marine. I'm militarily retired. I lost my lung in the Gulf War, but yes, I'm a Marine.
All right, Darren, I appreciate it. Stay on the line. I want to go now to Sherry. Sherry, what is your explanation as to why we call Marines leathernecks?
Hey, Chris.
Hey, Sherry.
Well, the story that I heard, it was because of the turn of the 19th century when we were going over there trying to protect all the shipping lines. They sent the Marines and the Navy over there. And because of the peaceful religion of Islam and the Barbary pirates, the first thing they did is they'd go to slice their necks off.
Yeah, try
cut, cut their necks, and then and they were wearing leather around their necks to protect them from dying.
Okay. All right, Sherry, you stay on the line, too. It's always great to hear from you. And Darren, glad to hear from you. Haven't heard from you for a while. Let's go to Christine from Altamont Springs and see what her explanation is why Marines are called leathernecks. Christine, thank you for calling.
Hi, guys. Very nice to meet you. And before they were wearing, before the Marines were wearing these fancy hats, their hats were made out of leather. And they had a support for their neck and a protection flap that protected them from combat to getting killed right away.
So
their neck was protected, and they called them leather neck.
Okay, Christine, so you say it was, you're like Sherry, you say it was a form of body armor.
That is correct, yes.
Okay, stay on the line. Stay on the line. I want to go now to Richie. Richie from Orlando. Why are Marines called leather necks?
Yeah, when during the invasion of Tripoli, when the Marines were invading over there, it was part of their gear, and they had to have that strap of leather around their necks. And since then, they've been called leathernecks.
Richie, thank you for calling. Jeff, do we have any others? Okay, we had one other caller who dropped off. That's his bad luck, because if he said essentially what all of our callers have said, he would have been correct, just like all of our callers.
That was easy.
Yep, and each and every one of you will get a $20 gift card from Cafe Positano, because, you know, yesterday was the 70th anniversary of Iwo Jima. And we appreciate our Marines, and we appreciate our people who know their Marine history. So each and every one of you is going to be, get a shirt and a gift card. And, Darren, we appreciate you being the first caller, and we certainly appreciate you being a combat-wounded Marine. We cannot ask any more from one of our fellow citizens than that they give up their life or part of their body or their time to defend the rest of us. And we so do appreciate it. So, yeah, Marines are called leathernecks. According to Bill Federer, it was more what Sherry, Christine, and I'm sorry, was it Richie, the last caller?
Richie was number four, yeah.
Yeah, that it was because during the battle with the Barbary pirates, they noticed that they would normally hack at their necks. Mm-hmm. And so they wore the leather as a form of body armor to ward off the blows. As I said, I just learned this from Bill Federer. I will take also Darren's explanation that it was a form of
or became a form of rigid type of uniform.
Well, he did say that it was folklore, I believe. Johnny's looked something up too.
I'm here at the Marine Corps Association and Foundation page, and it says that legend and lore have it that the term leatherneck was derived from leather neck bands worn in the late 1700s to protect Marines from the slash of the cutlass. Another more likely reason is that the high stocks were worn for discipline to keep Marines' heads high and straight.
I'll go with the first explanation over the second. I understand the second, but this is body armor. I mean, and body armor has been around since how long ago? I mean, the samurais used body armor. The knights of the Round Table used body armor.
Sure.
Muslims used body armor. But I don't want to, you know, I'm not trying to take anything away from what Darren is saying, because that's obviously valid too. So we'll, as I said, everyone who called tonight with that answer is declared a winner.
So what you're saying is correct, that the Muslims have had their history intertwined in the United States of America since its inception. Barack Obama was right.
He was half right. And that's part of the problem with liberals. They always take some little grain of truth and twist it around. Of course, he was trying to say that they were part of the great American experiment and what makes us great. Well, if you want to say that we had to raise up an army to defeat you, and that made us great, I guess maybe you're right.
Keeping them from beheading us helped make us great. Way to go, Mr. President.
All right. Okay. But I'm glad to hear from Darren. Sharon. Hadn't heard from him for a while. It's always great to hear from Sherry. And, of course, we appreciate the other callers as well. We appreciate each and every one of you listeners out there. We're already halfway through tonight's show. But like I said, the next president had better be prepared to deal with the antithesis, because Barack Obama is going to keep pushing. He's a community organizer. That's all he knows how to do is make trouble. And he's going to be making trouble. And if we don't get a bold guy, I mean a really bold guy, in the White House, we're going to get a synthesis that's going to be sickening. And you think it's bad now? This is just the beginning. This is just the beginning. And we're halfway through the show. Stick around. C.J. Pearson coming up next.
This is former professional wrestler Roxy Astor. I love to wrestle, especially when it comes to politics. For the best in political professional wrestling, I listen to the American Adversaries on AM 660 The Answer, WORL. I'd go to the mat with these guys any day.
That might not be such a bad thing.
Three. Can I ask a question?
Four, five, six, seven, 5,006.
Put you in a head scissors. That might not be so bad.
I want to ask a question.
What's that?
That's a great new promo and everything, but the song playing underneath it. Do you know what song that is?
That's her music, isn't it, Jeff?
I think that's... I don't know if that's her music or if
no,
that's...
No, well, here's the music I selected. It's Depeche Mode with Enjoy the Silence.
Enjoy the Silence. That's exactly what you want to play for a radio show. Hey, guys, enjoy the silence.
Dead air.
Well, you're not going to find any silence around here.
Well, I was joking with her. She silences her opponent in the ring.
Yeah. Otherwise, there might be some silence.
Do we have our guest? Do we have our guest?
Okay. Silence on the radio.
Silence on the radio.
Hey, guys, just enjoy this silence.
All right. Jeff's working on getting CJ on the show. If you remember a while back, Rudy Giuliani in a speech in Phoenix, I believe it was.
I think you're right, yeah.
Yeah. For someone else, it was a dinner for somebody else or something, wasn't it?
Right, but he was answering a question about the president. And Scott Walker was right next to him, and Scott Walker got grief for not stepping in and saying, Rudy Giuliani is not right.
Yeah. And Scott Walker aside, Rudy Giuliani made the comment he didn't think the president loves America. And he cited some examples of his own, if I'm not mistaken. And, of course, people like Scott Walker automatically get the microphone jammed in their face. You know, what do you think about this?
What do you think? Ask the people involved.
Yeah. And instead of standing up for Rudy Giuliani, they all basically more or less found a way to slink away, if you ask me. This is not the boldness that I'm talking about we need out of our candidate. Instead of buying into their argument, you make your own, which is what C.J. Pearson did. And we got him on the line right now. Many of you folks out there have seen his YouTube video, have seen his Facebook page. If you haven't, you need to see it, because he made a very impassioned and, I think, credible argument as to why Rudy Giuliani was right. So let's ask him himself. C.J. Pearson, thanks for being on the American Adversaries. We appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
It's an honor, I must say. First of all, tell us a little bit about yourself. What are you doing now? I understand you're 12 years old?
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
And I take it you're in school?
Yes.
Is there anything in particular that you want to be studying in school as you move up through high school and college?
You know, definitely. I definitely do plan to major in political science when I do go to undergrad, and hopefully plan to get my law degree in law school, hopefully here at UGA, and then maybe go be a prosecutor. Being a prosecutor is a strong dream of mine, and maybe one day run for state house and maybe be governor of the great state of Georgia. It's one of the biggest goals of mine.
Well, that's an admirable goal, and you never know where that path will take you, maybe even into the White House. We can always dream.
Definitely.
First of all, I love your accent. I was born in Georgia. I was raised down here in Florida, but, of course, the Georgia parents. And what part of Georgia do you live in?
Grovetown, which is like a suburb of Augusta, Georgia.
Augusta, Georgia. Okay. And you want to go to the University of Georgia, Athens, you said?
Yes.
You want to be a Bulldog, huh?
Definitely. Well, you know, I may want to go there, but I'm definitely far from Bulldog fan. It's Roll Tide all the way.
Look out!
Oh, Lord. Wow. That's good. That might get you in more trouble than slamming our president.
CJ. Yeah. How long have you been making political statements on YouTube or Facebook?
Well, you know, my first video was that President Obama, Do You Really Love America? And it was the first really political video that I had ever made on YouTube. And the reason I did was because I had that strong urge. I had that really the urge to make this video because Rudy Giuliani was being called a bigot, a racist, someone who, in all honesty, none of his statements were racial in any way whatsoever. And to me, it was despicable, and it enraged me, and that's why I made that video, to defend Rudy Giuliani for his comments, because in all honesty, he was right on point, and because his comments weren't racial in any way, and for me, a young African-American, to believe exactly what he believed, well, I guess I'm a racist, too.
Well, CJ, Nostradamus here. Let me take you someplace else. Over the weekend, Reverend Franklin Graham has been raked over those same coals for saying that there would be less police shooting if people listened to the police. I think what he said had nothing to do with race, and people are calling him a racist. Do you think they're being painted with the same brush?
Completely. I think these issues are not having to do anything with race. I hate when people view every single issue with race, and they make some of the most nonpartisan issues partisan. And if you look at the entire controversy surrounding Franklin Graham and his comments he made on Facebook, they were completely true. If you listen to police, what are the chances of you being shot? And number one, if you abide by the law, what are the chances of you even being pulled over? You know, so it's all about using common sense, something the left seems to not know how to do, which I'm not surprised at all. But it's really about focusing not on the racial pretense of the issue, but on the issue at hand. And the issue at hand is really the lack of respect that Franklin Graham mentioned in this post. And here's the thing. If we really want to solve this problem, I made a second video about this, Ferguson, the real issue. The real problem isn't police shooting African-Americans, but the problem is black-on-black crime. That's the real issue that we need to solve.
I believe you're absolutely right about that. Let me ask you, and you don't have to tell us where, but do you go to public school, private school, or are you homeschooled?
Yes, I go to public school.
Okay. What's been the reaction amongst your schoolmates?
You know, I think they're definitely supportive of it, and to the extent that they really like that I'm getting involved. Before I started making YouTube videos and all this good stuff, I did work on campaigns, and I actually presented two pieces of legislation to the Georgia General Assembly, and both of those pieces of legislation, what they did was they empowered young people to take a stand in their government. And I think that is really what inspired them, that a 12-year-old kid, someone that they knew and that they interact with on a daily basis, had presented a piece of legislation to the state legislature. And I think it inspired them to take a stand in their own way because, you know, I go to school every single day and I see them, and it's really inspiring. It makes me feel really good because I'll catch them with their Obama sties, and it makes me think, CJ, you're doing something right.
Indeed you are. Indeed you are. What about your teachers? What do they think about what you're doing?
You know, while most of my teachers, they would, of course, disagree, my biggest problem with it is this. I have this one particular teacher who seems to think that the First Amendment doesn't apply to children. And to me, I'd have to say that the First Amendment is my favorite amendment, followed closely by the second, is that the First Amendment knows no age, but all it knows is the American people. And that is the important part of this. Age, we have this misconception. We try to encourage young people to take a stand, but when they take a stand, we criticize them for being too young. Or when they take a stand and they are young, we say that they can't take a stand because they are too young, or they don't have their own opinions because they are young. And that's the misconception I think we have surrounding politics, that young people, they can form political thoughts, but it's up for us to trust them in their thoughts. If you look at Jonathan Crone, for example, Jonathan Crone, here was his problem. He got surrounded by the bright lights. He let the spotlight cloud his judgment, and that is why he flip-flopped. He didn't flip-flop because maybe he, you know, had a strong – he probably was a strong conservative, but I think he was overtaken by the bright lights and the left and the indoctrination. I think that was the big problem with him. And for me, I'm going to continue to speak up. No one's going to shut me up, and it's really going to continue to go and go. I've continued to make videos, and I will not stop because, in all honesty, when we give up that easily, that is when we failed, and that is when the Republic will cease to exist.
Now, CJ, you run a group called Young Georgians in Government, but apparently it's got not just Georgians in there. You've got young people from all across the country as part of it. Tell me about some of them.
Yeah, well, lots of people. We're actually looking to expand right now because of all of the outpouring support that we've received. Benji Backer, he spoke at CPAC in 2014. He's looking to get involved. Marquise Young, he is a great conservative star. Yvonne D. Bailey, she's running for State House over New Hampshire. Avery Jesper, she's all the way over in Oregon. We're all across this country, and this is what we're doing at right now, and these are plans that were just formulated yesterday. Me and this great group of conservatives, we're going to tour this country. We're going to hit every single swing state, and we're going to talk on college campuses. We're going to talk at universities, and we're going to inspire young people to find the right side of the political arena. We're going to inspire them to be conservatives in an environment where conservatism is taught to be wrong. That's what we're going to do. We're going to tour this great country. We're going to support our nominee in 2016. And the tour is basically what we're going to do in the summer of 2016, and we're going to rally our conservatives. We're going to rally young conservatives, and we're going to rebrand the GOP. Because we're no longer a party of old white guys, but we're more diverse than the Democratic Party.
First of all, can people join your organization, and how?
Well, they can. Feel free to like Young Doors in Government on Facebook, or feel free to like me on Facebook and shoot me a message. I'll definitely read it, and I'll reply, and I'll be sure to reach it back out to you. And if you'd like, you can also email me at cj@younggeorgians.org, which is cj@younggeorgians.org, and feel free to shoot me an email, and I'll be sure to reply.
And so, by the way, congratulations on getting your Facebook page back up, because it was taken down for about 10 days, wasn't it?
Well, my personal page has not been reopened. That seems to be the thing that people are thinking. It has not been reopened. I never lost my public figure page. So that remained up the entire time. The personal page was shut down due to someone reporting the page for me being too young. Here's my rebuttal to that. 7.5 million kids have access to Facebook every single day. And for one kid who just happened to call Obama out on his love for America, to have his Facebook shut down when 7.5 million kids continue to have theirs, I think it's a violation. It's just despicable to me.
Well, just so our listeners know, our Facebook page has a link to your website, the Young Georgians website. So please, listeners, feel free to go there, click around, find out about what they're doing.
Yeah, like him and like us as well while you're at it. Is there any age limit to people who can join your organization? Is it like over 30 not allowed or something like that?
you know, we're going to accept everybody because we here at our group, we realize that everyone has a place at the table in the success of this nation, that young ideas are great, but we need the wisdom of older individuals, and we want to hear what they have to say. Because in the future, we're going to take the reins of this country. But at the same time, we need the guidance of older individuals, and we'd love to have you all on board, too. As advisors, you may be too old to join, but you are definitely not too old to be an advisor to these great young minds across this entire country.
Now, CJ, most people get more conservative as they get older. They don't really wake up to the truth, really, a lot of them until they're in their 30s, 40s, or 50s. Mm-hmm. What in your life caused you to have such strong opinions?
It's simple. It's just education. I educated myself on the values of the party at a very young age. Limited government, liberty, personal responsibility, freedom, equal opportunity. These were all issues that I cared about, all principles that I shared. And that is why I'm conservative. It's not because of, you know, some deep down hate or whatever. It's because I believe in limited government. I think many young people believe in it, but it's the fault of our own party for not taking strides to educate young people on the values of our party. Because there's been many instances where kids will come up to me, they'll say, CJ, what's the difference between a Republican and a Democrat? And I'm sorry, it's very hard to give an unbiased answer to. And, you know, it's just not what kids should have to ask. The GOP should take strides to educate young people on the values of our party. Because I guarantee you, no young person wants to have the government telling them what to do. No young person wants to reward someone who doesn't work a day in their lives with a check every single month. No young person wants to do that, but it's up to the GOP to tell people, here at our party, we don't want anyone telling you what to do, but here's what we do. We reward people that work hard, and if you work hard, you'll be rewarded.
CJ, that brings me to a question that I wanted to ask you anyway. Mm-hmm. Were you at all inspired by the lack or the tepid response from Republicans to defending Rudy Giuliani to come in to his defense?
You know, I found it quite interesting. In all honesty, I think if you look at the presidential climate, it's going to be quite interesting how this formulates and how they did not defend Rudy Giuliani. I believe that Rudy, while he may be a bit controversial sometimes, he does command a bit of support in the establishment. I think it's going to be very hard to win them over. I think Ted Cruz came close to it. He didn't flock to Rudy Giuliani, but he did come close to it. And I think that Ted Cruz's strong urge to, you know, just speak candidly and to be a straight talker will aid him in the primaries. And with him announcing his candidacy tomorrow, I look forward to, you know, supporting him and also hearing what he has to say this primary season.
Yeah, you touched on what we talked about early in the show, that tomorrow's the day, and he's so far looking like the best conservative alternative. Now,
I think he's the closest to Reagan.
I think so. I think you may be right. Now, one of the legislations that you are backing is in the state legislature in Georgia to decrease the age for House candidates to be able to run from 21 to 18 and for the Senate from 25 to 21. Why is that important to you?
I think this is a party. This is an issue that we can lead on. The GOP here in Georgia controls. We have a supermajority in both houses of this legislature. We have the opportunity to lead on this issue. This legislation will empower young people to make a difference in their government, to serve their community well. Because in all honesty, a democracy is a government for the people, by the people. And it should be up to the people to decide whether or not age is a relevant factor in their representatives and who they choose to support. It shouldn't be up to the government to decide that, because we all know that when the government thinks that they know best, it really isn't what's best. And this legislation will return the power to the people to make more decisions concerning their representatives, which, in all honesty, they should have had in the first place.
CJ, I tell you, divine intervention.
How sweet
Jeff
it is.
Jeff doesn't know what the bump music is going to be, but how sweet it is to hear, CJ, these words coming out of your mouth. Will you stay with us through the break? All right, we're talking with C.J. Pearson. If you have a question for him, now's your chance, 407-774-8255. This is the face of things to come, and I like it.
It's hope for the future, baby.
Yeah, how sweet it is. We'll be right back. American Adversaries, and we have C.J. Pearson on the line with us right now from Augusta, Georgia, where he lives and goes to school. And, boy, for a guy that's educated in public school, you sure are smart, C.J. You must have done a lot of research on your own.
You know, definitely, you know, I think I have a strong, just a big personality trait of me is independent, and I took the initiative to learn about the values of our country on our own, and when I did, you know, I was bound to be conservative. Regardless of my parents' different views, I found the right way, and I'm glad I did.
Well, I was going to ask you about that. Your parents aren't staunch conservatives, are they?
No, they are not. They are liberals.
Wasn't Michael J. Fox in a sitcom like that in the 80s?
Well, yeah, Family Ties.
Yeah,
yeah. But CJ shows that all things are possible with God's intervention. But CJ, man, you are on the right path. Johnny Thank Guns you. Has a question for you.
Hey, CJ, got a quick question for you here. You know, Ted Cruz is going to announce his candidacy for president tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm on your Twitter page here, and back on March 20th, you tweeted out, "I seriously may have just changed my mind on Ted Cruz." Mm-hmm. Wanted to get your thoughts behind that tweet and what your opinions are of Ted Cruz.
You know, definitely. I'll be honest with you, before I made that tweet, I considered Ted Cruz unelectable. But you know what I did? I looked at a CPAC speech. I looked at his speech at the Iowa event, at the Ag Summit, and I realized that this man was a conservative that we could win with if we maneuvered him the correct way. And before I was, of course, an unwavering Rand Paul supporter, but my one criticism of all of that is his foreign policy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I believe that if we had a president that embraces the foreign policy that Rand does, that American exceptionalism and the defense of our nation could be in jeopardy. And I believe in liberty, I believe in freedom, so does Ted Cruz. And I think if you want the best hybrid between Marco Rubio and Rand Paul, then you're going to support Ted Cruz, and that's why I support him.
CJ, Your website, once again, well, you don't have a website. You have a Facebook page, I take it.
And a website, younggeorgians.org. Yeah. We have a link to it on our Facebook.
Okay, younggeorgians.org. Okay, yeah, we're going to link up to
it. We have. It's up.
We have linked up to it. Okay, all right. I just wanted to make sure of that. CJ, what's your goal next? What do you want to do next?
You know, one of my biggest goals is, of course, to speak at CPAC 2016. That has always been a big goal of mine. I definitely want that opportunity to inspire young people. That is really where I want to be. I think it's the best atmosphere to inspire young people, where really young people are all tuned in listening. And that is the biggest goal of mine, and that's what I hope to do. And so with that being said, that is a huge goal of mine. Hopefully one day I'll run for office. But, my goals are definitely lined out.
Okay. All right.
CJ, being down here in Florida, we get to see you more on a national stage. Mm-hmm. On your Twitter again, I see that you've been talking with producers with Fox. I even see a tweet about the Ellen Show. When do you think the next time we will be able to see you on a national stage will be?
You know, on a national stage, I think you may see me quite soon on Fox and Friends. You may see me on the Ellen Show. I think I definitely do want to burst into the national scene, simply because it is the best atmosphere to inspire young people to take a stand. That is exactly why I'm going on the Ellen Show. It's, regardless of our difference in political beliefs, I think Ellen, she has that audience that is primarily young, and it's mm-hmm. the audience I really do want to inspire, and that is, of course, the reason I'm going on her show. And I think, you know, Fox and Friends, that's in the works right now. Hannity is also in the works. Kennedy on Fox Business News, those are all in the works. And, these national appearances, they're not for self-benefit. But what they are for is the opportunity to inspire people to make a difference.
And like we were saying earlier on this show, you keep on referring back to things we've talked about in our first hour. Mm-hmm. That's what the winner in 2016, if he is a Republican or she, is going to have to do. They're going to have to go and engage audiences with whom they don't agree. They're going to have to go to NAACP conventions, whether they feel comfortable there or not. And they're going to have to at least make an appearance and put up a show for them. If they if they opt out of that, they're going to be missing out on a big opportunity.
Yeah, I think that one of the things the GOP has been missing is people like you who can make the case for the conservatism and need to be making it everywhere. We need to sort of take Barack Obama's lead. We need to take the argument everywhere.
Definitely.
And present it to every argument. We need to follow his argument with the conservative argument to negate his argument.
Definitely. And that's one of the reasons I was an initial supporter of Rand Paul. He took the initiative to go out to speak to historically black colleges. He went over into the South Side of Chicago. He went into places conservatives would never go. And Ted Cruz, he's inching towards it. He was on Late Night with Seth Meyers a few days ago.
Yeah, Seth Meyers, that's right.
Yeah. Right, okay.
I was trying to remember which show he was on. Thanks for that.
Yeah, he's diving in. His very best to inspire young people to make a change. And that is exactly what we need to do. We need to tap into the audience, as we didn't do before.
All right.
Late Night is great. Also, as well, let's go into these black neighborhoods. Let's go into these minority colleges. Yeah. And let's make that change.
Okay. We have two more quick questions for you, then we're going to have to let you go tonight, but I certainly hope we can get you back. CJ, have you gotten any negative backlash other than your Facebook page being pulled?
Of course, I bashed the leader of the free world. Of course, I would get backlash.
you bashed the Messiah, you heretic, you.
yes, I did.
Blasphemy.
It's basic stuff, of course. Uncle Tom, someone who doesn't know what they're talking about, a 12-year-old who's a parrot, which is completely ignorant to me, because if you did a quick Google search of my name, you would quickly find out that my parents are Democrats.
All right.
That's just lack of initiative on the left.
And you're not going to let it slow you down, I take it.
Yeah, definitely not. It just inspires me to do more, because when a 50-year-old guy is sitting there all caught up over the words of a 12-year-old, that's when I'm doing something right. When I tick off a guy that, in honesty, may not even be slightly affected by me when I grow older, it inspires me to do something more, and that is exactly why I'm in this game, is to make a difference and to make change. And
right.
The more people I take off, the best thing I'm doing.
Quickie, before we end, because we got 30 seconds till they hit the top of the hour, I see two issues on your front page of younggeorgians.org. I will just tell you the name, and you tell me, for or against, medical marijuana.
For.
Okay. Common Core.
Again.
Okay, you and Chris line up exactly.
Mm-hmm. All right, I got one from our colleague Carl for you. What do you read to stay so informed?
Fox News, of course, Politico. I am a big fan of CNN because it kind of gives both to the side. I love I'd have to say.
All right, CJ, I got to cut you off there. Thanks so very much for being with us, and we'll get you back if you'll do it.
Well, thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
When America fell into darkness, a call rang out across the land. Lair Adams, entertainer and entrepreneur, answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar Christopher Hart. They teamed with lifelong radio pro Nostra Dennis. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams, Nostradamus, Johnny Guns, and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries.
Pretty good tonight, folks, as we enter into the third hour of our show. That's right, you got the American Adversaries Classic 3-hour Sunday evening tour, complete with Lair Adams, me, Christopher Hart, our executive producer, Nostra Dennis, Johnny Guns, our WTF News Hound, Lucas Paris has us up on the head cam.
Hey,
you can go to American Adversaries on Facebook and you'll find us linked up there. Jeff Sinis is on the bridge. And this hour is being brought to you by Firm Foundation Home Inspections. You know, Aubrey Kahn sat in the studio with us last week. We had a lot of fun with Aubrey in the studio.
I heard that. I missed him. I heard he was awesome.
He was. And, of course, Aubrey does home inspections. You can visit his website at orlandoshomeinspector.com, orlandoshomeinspector.com. 321-624-0254 is his number. Even if you just want to call him up and thank him for sponsoring our show, or even curse him for sponsoring our show.
Oh, he'll laugh either way.
321-624-0254. Aubrey Kahn, Firm Foundation Home Inspections.
He's one of our favorite African-American friends.
Absolutely he is. Aubrey Kahn's a great fella. And we're certainly privileged to have him as a sponsor. Of course, along with Cafe Positano, Refresh Computers, My Liberty Threads, Vacation Travel Planners, and Just Toys Classic Cars.
Roxy Pacifics.
And Roxy Pacifics. It's the cards right here in front of me. Fixtheskin.com. All right, we're going to go to Sunny, our California glow girl, for her regular visit with us tonight. Unfortunately, she's bringing some sad news with her tonight. Sunny, we're so sorry to hear about the loss of one of your dear friends.
Oh, thank you, guys. How are you guys doing today?
Not bad, not bad. It's a beautiful day here in Central Florida.
Wonderful. It's always nice. It is sunny here. However, I'm a little cloudy today. Yes, we did lose someone very big throughout the world, actually, because if anyone way back when remembers selling Herbalife vitamins, and well, before there was multiple other products, that is,
yeah,
the vitamins, you know, it's grown to be, you know, a major, major, major company in this world. And with many products, from shampoos to you name it, they have it. You know, even clothes at this point, I believe, they brought in for Herbalife. And, in fact, that was the last time I sat down with Mr. Henry Newman. And we had actually dated a few times. I sent you a picture of him, a really nice man, Chris. A beautiful, beautiful human being, great spirit, who has went through a lot of tragedy in his life. He lost his son at a young age. I think he was around 8. Mm. Little boy in a traffic accident.
Oh, yeah.
Took his life. His brother, who was original of the Herbalife founder, passed away as well, was murdered. So he lost his brother as well. And this, I think, was in 1998, I want to say. Yeah, he's had a lot of great loss. He is survived by his mother, Mary, who, by the way, is 93 years old.
Wow.
And his father, Frank. And he is from Germany, a product from, I want to say, Belsen, Germany?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
There is
from Bergen, Belsen, Germany.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And he is now, his birthday was just March 5th, and I did speak to him on March 5th, and wished him happy birthday, and he was in good spirits, just turned 68 years old. And, you know, 68 is a young 48 nowadays. So
it
I'm
is.
Very, yeah, very, very sad to hear the news. And I just got it yesterday. And the day before is when this incident occurred. It's still under investigation, but they do want to say it's an apparent suicide and due to alcoholism, which is a high rate in this world, as we know. It's a deadly disease, not just like drugs. Alcohol is a drug.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Most powerful. A most powerful one. A most powerful one, yeah.
Yes. And
Henry Newman is his name.
Henry Newman, yes.
And it's a sad day, of course, for his family and friends and I guess all the people at Herbalife. Was he the present CEO of Herbalife?
Yes.
He was, yeah. I'm sure they'll be talking about it tomorrow morning on the business channels.
That's... Yeah. All our prayers go out to his parents. It's strange to say. You know, condolences to a man like that's parents.
68-year-old man. Yeah, he obviously had a lot of good life ahead of him. And the picture that you sent me, it was a beautiful picture of the two of you. You both had great big smiles, and he looked tanned and healthy and happy.
Oh, yeah.
And it's hard to imagine that it could have been so different.
Yes, and at that time we were, because he has money and stock in Napa Valley Vineyards, and we were there at a very good... family and friends, and I guess you want to say probably half of Herbalife family down in Orange County. We went to what we call the Fish Market Restaurant, and we had a wine tasting there together, and we were very happy, yes. I was radiant, everyone says. I was just so happy to see him, and we had the best time, and no clue of any type of, you know, drinking problem then. So I don't know if it had occurred from the time I did not, you know, see him up until now, or it was a silent thing, you know.
You really don't know people, Sonny.
No.
Sometimes you really don't.
Yeah. Isn't that something? That's what's shocking the most, I guess, you know, when you hear that and you're like, wait a minute, I'm pretty good, you know, judgment of character, especially when you're right next to them and you're even having drinks with them. And, you know, you always think alcoholism is where they don't stop drinking. They just keep drinking. And keep hitting, you know. He was not like that at all.
Yeah, it's not always like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was rather strange, but it could have, you know, happened in the last 4 years or so. Who knows? It doesn't take long, just like a drug. You know, one time and then boom. You know, if you are in that type of your brain is, you know, not there. Your heart, I don't know what was going on in his life currently. Because every time I spoke to him, he sounded wonderful and nice and. In good spirit. So, it's going to rattle and roll the world, and Herbalife will, you know, definitely go on, I'm sure. And, but yeah, it's a very sad demise to the whole family. Can you imagine Mary, the mother, who has survived yet at 93 and all these losses in her life?
Both
her sons now, and now her grandson. Well, her grandson, her son, and now her other son. It's terrible.
It's sometimes God's puts on us a burden that we can't understand why.
Yes.
Was he a man of God?
Yes, very much so. Oh, yes. His faith and, and
that's
even
good.
Brought it into Herbalife. A lot of his, I guess, if you would, people that work for him, all his colleagues were either Buddhist or Christian or Catholic. They were of good faith. And speaking of the faith, tonight, I don't know if you guys are going to catch that, but Finding Jesus is going to be on. And it's coming on here at 9 p.m. It's supposed to bring up whether Jesus had a second brother, which should be interesting if it's fact, fate, or if it's fraud. But it should be a pretty interesting story tonight.
Yeah, Finding Jesus.
Yes.
We were very sorry to hear about Henry Newman, and I know you're close to him as a friend. And so our sadness extends to you, of course, as well. And to if you'll extend it also to his family.
Oh, sure,
and,
I will. Well, his funeral will be Tuesday here. It's going to be, I've only been here 6 months, guys, and I'm going to my first funeral here in Arizona.
Wow.
And it's ironically called the Green Acres. And that's where his brothers laid to rest and his son. And so Tuesday will be the funeral for anyone who is listening and does happen to know Henry, or does like to send flowers. You know, it's going to be at the Green Acres on Hayden Road in Scottsdale, Arizona. And it will be Tuesday at 3 p.m.
So I take it he lived in Arizona, or was
he
from?
Yes, he's also in Scottsdale.
Okay, I see. That's not far from Phoenix, is it?
No, not at all.
Within an hour.
Yes, he was right. He's very close. He's in Paradise Valley, so for me it's like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And now, Sonny, you've heard the platitude, I'm sure, that God never gives you more than you can handle. And I think especially people of faith, you know, when something like this happens,
Yes. Absolutely.
He may just not have realized he could handle it. Sometimes despair just grabs a hold of you, and there's nothing you can do.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. And I think when one is going and detoxing, if you will, you're already at a weakened state.
Sure.
And I did speak to his nephew today. Mm-hmm. What a wonderful man, Alex, and what he had endured. He was there with him in a week and a half just helping him as he's going through his detox. And I guess he stepped out, went to the store. This is his nephew, by the way, and he came back and found him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, without getting into the details.
Yeah,
so,
that's pretty sad.
Yeah, that's got to be traumatic on the only nephew left, by the way. So, yeah, it's a tragic story. And like you said, God is, you know, he knows what he's doing.
As far as we know, we don't understand.
We don't like it. We know that
as long as he was a man of faith, that, you know, it's,
oh, yes.
it's you know, so... but it's always
a very caring man, by the way, charitable, humanitarian.
Yeah.
He lost his son at a young age and he loved his little boy. He gave back to all contribution, for children. And yeah, it just tears me up just thinking about it.
Yeah. Well, he's left behind a great organization, Herbalife. As you say, it's really grown, especially over the past few years. And it's made a lot of people a lot of money. It's a great expression of capitalism, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
And
if I'm not mistaken, I think they trade on a stock market,
yeah,
whether it's Dow or New York Stock Exchange.
He's did amazing things since his brother passed away running this company. And as we know, they have so many products out there, and it's good. I mean, you know, next day, I remember Amway.
Yeah. Rich DeVos runs the Orlando Magic here.
There you go.
And you spoke to him most recently on his birthday, and he seemed fine, huh?
Yes, March 5th was his birthday.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of times that's the way it happens. You know, the person seems okay, and then all of a sudden it's not.
And here I am. I feel so silly because every time we talk, well, let's go get a drink. You want to meet for a drink? And
You didn't know.
I didn't know. Yeah, so.
Yeah.
Don't beat yourself up about it. Just get in the wrestling ring, let someone else beat you up.
Yeah, well, yeah. It was a social thing for him, too, I'm sure. And
Absolutely.
And,
because that's what it is out there. And then when you have, money invested in vineyards and, wine, they have their own wine, Herbalife, I believe, does. And which I found out when I went to these events with him, and it was something, truly amazing. And I didn't, like I said, you don't know. You don't know.
Right.
And we don't know what state of mind he was in. Obviously, it was something.
Okay.
And rest in peace, Henry Newman. We love you.
Yeah.
And thank you guys for letting me share.
Oh, absolutely. And we feel your pain. And our prayers will go out for Henry and his family and friends and you tonight as we make our prayers. And
yes, thank you.
All right, Sonny, we'll leave all the other topics for next week. That's pretty heavy stuff you're dealing with right now, and so we'll just talk more next week, okay? You take care of yourself.
Thank you, guys, and God bless you all. Have a wonderful, wonderful day out there. Thank
you, too, girl.
Listeners.
Have a great week.
Okay,
take care. You too.
Bye-bye.
God bless you. All right.
Well, we certainly hope we stimulate yours. That, of course, was the beautiful Sonny from Southern California, now living in Arizona, and our special condolences to her at the loss of her friend. We are the American Adversaries. You got us on a Sunday night with about 45 minutes left to go in this particular edition. I'm Lair Adams. We have Christopher Hart with us. Johnny Guns, who's in the bullpen, getting ready to throw the ball out, I guess.
He's trying out the knuckleball tonight.
It's a knuckleball.
Pretty weird. Yeah.
I want to see that. Of course, that was Nostradamus that you heard. He predicts the future, the past, and the fantasy. I don't know.
And we got John Butler in the bullpen as well. Of course,
John Butler
Book. John Butler Book. It will be live.
On a different station.
At
8 o'clock on our sister station, WTLN 950. Join me up the dial at 8 o'clock to listen to John's show. It's always a great show. I really enjoy listening to it, and he gets great callers. And I'm like all the other callers on his show. We love to hear it when Sherry calls his show. Sherry, thank you for calling us tonight, and make sure you call John tonight.
Thanks in advance.
And Paul in Kentucky, another one of his regulars.
Yeah, Ron and John from right here in Central Florida. John Butler Books got a great show, and he's got an even better mind. I mean, he's got a mind like a steel trap. And he knows how to use words in a positive fashion to get his point across. He does it
so
effectively.
And he understands politics.
He understands politics and religion, and especially people.
And when you listen to his show, you don't need white bread and mayonnaise, because he's not going to hand you any bologna.
That's John Butler Book coming up at 8 o'clock on 950. And then, of course, you can listen, come back down the dial at 9 o'clock and listen to Armed American Radio. They'll be right here on AM 660, The Answer, 8 to 11 tonight. And 60 Minutes ought to have been pretty good tonight. I hate to talk about our competition, but they're going to do a special on the atrocities being carried out against Christians over in the Middle East.
About time someone in the mainstream media talks about
them, right? You just
stole
my line. I was going to say, about
time.
I'll back off. Absolutely. Well, speaking of you, since you're the resident Catholic,
what?
Did you hear what the Pope just said the other day?
Oh, gee. You know, whenever any conversation starts with that.
Did you hear what the Pope just said?
It used to be, did you hear what Kanye West said the other day? And now the Pope is the source of all this. Okay, go ahead. What?
And I quote, "I have the sensation that my pontificate will be brief, 4 or 5 years. I don't know, or 2 or 3. Well, 2 have already passed." Is he predicting the future here? What's going on?
I don't know, but I know if the end were coming, he might get the advance email on it.
He got the advance notice.
He might.
Well, it's interesting that he would say that. I don't know if he means health wise, or that he only intends to stick around that long, or
maybe he'll retire like the one before. They'll live in the ex pope's house. They could make a sitcom.
Yeah, I know we've had periods in history when there have been two opposing popes. Have there ever been three or more?
No, I don't think he's an anti pope. I think he's just the current pope. They'd have to have a new pope, and three popes is way too many.
Anyway, he has.
Some people say one is too many.
Yeah, well, but he has made that comment, sort of a mysterious comment. All right, speaking of comments, I want to comment once again about the Iranian talks. Guess who's actually got a spine in these talks? It's the five members of the Security Council plus Germany. That's Britain, France, the United States.
Russia and China.
Yeah.
I'd say France.
You got it.
Wow.
France is
really?
The one who's standing up saying, hey, you know, we can't let these guys roll us. Right now, the big sticking point, I guess we've already made the concessions on they're going to have the nuclear program. They can have their centrifuges. They can keep the Iraq, I think it's spelled A-R-A-K, Iraq nuclear facility open where they can produce plutonium. All these things they're going to be able to keep. The only question now they're arguing about is, when will the sanctions be lifted? The Iranians want the sanctions lifted right away. And that's what the Obama administration seems to be leaning toward, with something that they, a snapback, I think they called it. In other words, if the Iranians violate the terms, why, we'll snap those sanctions right back in place.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, right. It's exactly right. No way that's going to happen. So France is holding out, saying, you know, you behave yourself for the 10 years of the agreement, and then we'll lift the sanctions. Kind of what Bibi Netanyahu said. And that should be the position that we take with these scoundrels over there. But if it were up to me, I don't think they should be even dealing with these people.
No, you cannot make a deal with people who feel that it is okay to lie with your enemies.
You're making a deal with the devil.
Literally. Quite literally.
Literally. And I made this point on the show before. All you're going to do is make it possible for that devil to stick around a lot longer and be a lot more powerful. And lo and behold, Rick Santorum said much the same thing last Saturday, not yesterday, but last Saturday at the Awakening during our interview with him. He said, you know, this deal's, I asked him, what did he think about that letter that the 47 senators signed? He said, well, I would have been number 48, and this is a bad deal from the beginning. It's going to allow this regime to stay in power. He's absolutely right.
the best thing that could happen would be for these talks to fall apart.
And a lot of people think no deal is better than any deal.
But
and
then, Chris,
that's what I'm saying. Chris, with this regime, no deal.
What would happen to poor Barack Obama's legacy? That's where this is really going to here, and we know that's what his interest is.
And he can't have Valerie Jarrett pouting around the White House either. So obviously he's going to keep pushing for it. But it's quite interesting that it is the French, you know, who have grown the spine and are saying, "Hey, whoa, wait a minute here, wait a minute." And of course now with the election results and the so called nasty tax. That Netanyahu used, like Democrats, you know, have never done the same thing, right, to get their vote out. You know, they're going to be burning churches, going to put you back in chains. You remember all those sayings if you voted for Republicans? What the prime minister did was basically child's play compared to the Democratic playbook. And, of course, they're raking him over the coals for it.
And his opponents had financial and political support from an organization founded by Barack Obama.
But you're supposed to ignore that, Dennis.
Yeah. And he sent one of his top campaign hired guns over there to help out over there, too, a fellow by the name of Jeremy Bird.
I wonder if he came back or if they left him over there.
Came back in shame.
Conservatives always have to prove themselves. Liberals don't. They can just make the statement and they can lie as much as they want. They never have to back it up.
And whose fault is that? And this goes back, takes us all the way back to the very first part of the show.
It's our conservatives fault for not calling them out on it.
Exactly. That's why I call for blue face politics out of the next president. He's got to talk until he's blue in the face to support and promote conservatism. And I mean in front of each and every audience until we're sick and tired of it. He's got to continue to do it, just like Barack Obama.
And he's got to be as clear and forthright as C.J. Pearson was with us for a half an hour on the radio. He made more sense in a half an hour than I've heard any politician make in the last 8 years.
And I don't want to take anything away from C.J. Pearson, but for heaven's sake, if a 12-year-old young man can do it, certainly the boys up there in Washington, D.C. can do it.
One senator, maybe? One or two congressmen?
Yeah.
Anyone? Anyone?
Oh, yeah. Do we hear any bids? It can be done, and if it takes the next generation to do it right, well, we just need to hang on, and it's our obligation to do so. But nonetheless, hats off to the French, and we'll start calling French fries again. But certainly we appreciate what they are doing. The president has come out with new fracking rules, and they are very onerous. It require these companies to do redundant things that would basically not do anything to make the fracking process any more clean or safe. But it would require these companies to give away some trade secrets as well. But that's the bad news. The good news is his executive order only applies to federal lands.
Now, wasn't John Casey telling us over Cafe Positano's that there are some problems with the way fracking is done right now, but they can be corrected?
No, the problem is not with the fracking process. Mm-hmm. The problem is what do they do with the water that is used in the fracking process? Okay, just to recap, fracking is a drilling technique where it can be the well can either be a straight well, which in other words they just drill it straight down, or a horizontal well, which is where they go down and then go horizontally. Either way, you can frack. But the way you frack is you drill the hole with the pipe, a hollow pipe down in there, and then you force a certain solution of water down in there, and it's basically sand mixed with water, salt water, if you
muddy
will.
Water.
Yeah, muddy water. They call it mud, as a matter of fact. And it lubricates and also cracks the rock down there. Now, Larry, I think it asked the question about earthquakes.
Yes.
In Colorado or somewhere.
No, it was Texas and Oklahoma.
Right.
And they both had seen quite an increase.
In small seismic activity.
Very small. They weren't really quakes. They were tremors.
And John said that it was not due to the fracking, but the reintroduction of the wastewater into the ground. Because the fracking is done at very deep depths. Okay, and so it's not going to affect faults that are much more close to the surface.
But they can change that process and make it better, correct?
Well, yeah. You don't have to re-inject that water back into the ground. You can put it in holding tanks. You can clean it up and reuse it. It doesn't have to be done that way. But many states require it to be done that way because it's considered, quote-unquote, polluted water. It's polluted with dirt, for heaven's sake. I mean, what do you get out of a lake or a river? This is just absurd. And so there are not problems with fracking. There are problems with idiots out there who want to control the process and don't know what the hell they're doing. You see? It's not the process of fracking. It's what we do with the water after we have fracked. Those fracking idiots.
They have no fracking idea what they're doing.
They certainly, the frack, don't. But we do, and we'll be right back.
Answer.
And you got us on our Sunday night, too, folks. It's great to be with you. And it's time to go ahead and, well, not pull the hammer back just yet, but you got to put another bullet into the chamber. Because we have, coming up, Mr. Bang Bang himself.
Johnny's got
Johnny
a gun.
Guns. Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun.
Fire away, Johnny.
All right, WTF News, ladies and gentlemen. Story number one. An animal rescue group in Georgia said it's working to locate and capture a goose that was photographed with a dart through his head. I could have asked C.J. Pearson if he had heard this story.
A goose? What's that?
Goose photographed with a dart through its head.
Okay.
Meg Harrison said that...
sure, it wasn't one of those Halloween arrow things, you know, they just put over your head. It makes it look like it's coming in one side.
Okay. Meg Harrison said that she and her son spotted the injured goose Tuesday at Arlington Memorial Cemetery in Sandy Springs, and they contacted Aware Wildlife Center. The center said rescuers are attempting to capture the goose so its injury can be treated. Officials said similar injuries are becoming increasingly common. The center treated a goose dubbed Steve last year after he was spotted in Kennesaw and eluded capture for 2 months with a 2-foot arrow through its head. Wait a second. Arrow through the head? Name Steve? That's one wild and crazy goose.
Well, excuse you.
All right. Goose kebab, John Butler book says.
Iowa State. We're going to Iowa
goose
State.
On a stick?
Iowa State Representative Ross Postain is gaining internet fame after being photographed on the House floor reading a book called Sex After 60. The Des Moines Register reports.
What better place to be reading that, right?
Heck yeah!
That was it after 60 seconds?
Yeah, 61.
Yeah.
The Des Moines Register reports that the book was being passed around the house. being passed around the house. And of course, it lands with Possein, who is 59 years old. So here you go. Here's something to look forward to.
He's preparing.
59 Shades of Grey?
The book is a gag gift. It's just a book full of blank pages. Possein.
I get it.
Yeah. Possein said he received angry emails for his lack of attentiveness. He told a local TV station, "I was totally engaged in what was going on the floor. I knew we were going to vote on amendments, so it wasn't like I wasn't paying attention to what's going on. If any of my constituents were offended, I apologize. I certainly wasn't trying to offend anybody. I'm just doing my job here for my constituents." Sex After 60, like I said, is a book with blank pages. It's also from the same author that brought you these bestsellers, What Obama Knows About Foreign Policy, Sex After Marriage, and The Successful History of Johnny Gunn's Love Life.
Wow.
Yes.
All three bestsellers.
Yeah. I've read that last book way too many times.
Oh, my word.
Let's not go there. Does anybody watch C-SPAN anymore?
Yes.
You liar.
Are you doing the story we heard on the radio the other day?
You liar. On Tuesday, there's a show called Washington Journal, and it was a show. They were talking about how much influence Congress should have in negotiations with Iran, and they had a gentleman named Jack Strickland, and I want to play this phone call for you. Hit it, Jeff.
Around negotiations, how much influence that should Congress have on this process? Los Angeles, California, Republican line. Here is Jack. Go ahead.
Hi, good morning. I'm Jack Strickland.
I just want to make it clear, first of all, I'm calling from Bel Air, California, but I am originally from Philadelphia, specifically West Philadelphia. But anyway, I was actually discussing this issue with a friend of mine recently while I was in Philly. It occurred on a basketball court. At some point during the conversation, a couple of guys who were up to no good essentially started causing trouble in my neighborhood. I got in one little fight, and my mom got scared and said, "You're moving with your auntie and uncle in Bel Air."
Again, for the first 45 minutes.
And they cut him off. They didn't let him finish his point. Here at WTF News, we don't cut people off. No, 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 no. So we're going to go to Jack Strickland, who's on the phone and who's going to finish his C-SPAN cut him off. Jeff, hit number two.
I was actually discussing this issue with a friend of mine recently while I was in Philly.
Yeah.
It occurred on a basketball court.
Yeah,
right. At some point during the conversation, a couple of guys who were up to no good essentially started causing trouble in my neighborhood.
Keep going.
I got in one little fight, and my mom got scared and said, "You're moving with your auntie and uncle in Bel Air."
I whistle for a cab. Yeah, okay, now. Fresh in it, dice in the mirror. I thought this cover was rare, so I thought, forget it. Yo, home's the Bel Air. Keep going, Jack. What else? Up to a house about 7 or 8, and I yelled to the cabbie, "Yo, home, smell me later." I went with my kingdom. I was finally there to set him up road as the Prince of Bel Air. There we go. Thank you, Jack Strickland.
That was dope.
That was hot. There we go.
Oh, my word.
Got to start watching C-SPAN more now.
Oh, my Lord. Did you know Caesars is in bankruptcy? Caesars Palace in Las Vegas?
Ooh. No. We can pick it up for a song.
Do you know what their most valuable asset is? It's not the building.
Yeah.
It's not the machines. It's not the tables.
It's the showgirl costumes?
No.
No.
It is the information they have on their high rollers.
Oh, really? That can't be for sale.
Reportedly to be worth over $1.5 billion. Is it worth something? That's right. Out of their 45 million members, they have information on all of them, especially the bigger the roller you are, the more the information they have on you. And that is very valuable information to people in the trade, so
it can't
speak.
It can't be legal to give information like that to other parties. It can't be.
This is the weird thing about the Obama Justice Department. We did this story a while back, I think on WTF News 2 as well. I don't remember if it was made WTF, but we did talk about it. The Justice Department requires the casino to be sure that their players are playing with legal money.
Right. They're coming off the street. How do you know that?
Well, you buy information from Caesars, and that's how you know.
Wow.
For $1.5 billion. $1.5 billion, not $1.05 billion. $1.5 billion for the information they have on their gamblers. Big money in that stuff.
That's too bad, because the lobby of that hotel is awesome. It's got the painting of the sky inside. It looks, it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Been there.
All right. You've heard of Lizard Lips. You ever been called Lizard Lips?
Wasn't that Hulk Hogan's name in the Rocky movie? No?
I'm sure some of my exes Thunder could lips. Probably say it.
I didn't know this, but evidently there's been a big debate amongst dinosaurologists, whatever they call themselves, paleontologists amongst them, whether dinosaurs had lips or not.
Who cares?
Well, they do. So they have hired a guy who was famous in Hollywood for makeup and building faces out of bones and fragments and stuff like that to develop a realistic dinosaur mouth, so to speak. For most of the Tyrannosaurus Rex had lips. And he looked like Mick Jagger.
Wow. Walked like him, too.
Who's coming to town, by the way, in June. Or he's going to wheel himself up on the stage with his wheelchair.
I wonder if they also move like Jagger. Move like Jagger.
And I got a couple of related stories. One of them's from today's Orlando Sentinel, talking about transgenders. You know, there's a bill working its way through our legislature this session, which makes it against the law for you to go into a restroom that is not of your birth gender.
Really?
Yeah, they're trying to cut down on people just waltzing into a bathroom saying, I'm so-and-so.
What's Planet Fitness going to do?
Take that, Planet Fitness, yeah.
Well, exactly. Well, the transgender community is out in force, so to speak, in Tallahassee to speak to legislatures about this. About 100 of them showed up in Tallahassee this past week to lobby for their, you know, their position, which of course will be not to allow this to happen, and making arguments like, oh, if I go into the, you know, the men's room and I'm a woman, then I might
be raped. Call myself a woman.
Yeah. And many of them are in the process of going through the transgender. The point I'm bringing this up is 100 of them get together and go up there. What's the big deal about that? Almost all other legislation never sees that many people come to Tallahassee to talk or speak about it. Mm-hmm. And we wonder why we get stuck with these bizarre laws. It's because we sit on our butts at home and don't do anything about it, when we could be doing just like these ladies and gentlemen of the whatever, get up there and get be a part of the process.
They're a minority, but they're a vocal, flamboyant, and fabulous minority.
Fabulous! And there is hope for them now if they make a mistake. At least if they go from man to woman. Did you hear about the surgery in South Africa?
No.
This fella lost his ding-a-ling.
Oh, no.
Yes, he lost his ding-a-ling in a ritual, what do they call it?
Bobbiting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A ritual practice. I guess the knife slipped or something, and he lost his ding-a-ling.
Yeah. Bad rabbi.
He got a new ding-a-ling.
Really?
From a dead person who didn't need his ding-a-ling anymore.
Ah!
And it works.
How would you know?
It works.
Of course.
So if you're a transgender, went from a man to a woman, you don't like it, you can go back.
That's it. That's the new organ donor card.
Oh, yeah.
I'm going to update mine.
Well,
you're what?
Organ donor card.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It is the Sunday night 3-hour tour of the American Adversaries, the classic show. It's been a great one, but we're not done with the greatness yet. One segment left, and I know for a lot of you, share my opinion that this is the best segment of all, because this is when we all get to sit back, relax, and stare at Lair Adams while he gives us his closing remarks. Take it away, Lair.
See, what you've done is you've just set the bar so incredibly high. I can't.
You can tiptoe over.
I'm going
home now.
You don't
even need to jump.
Well, okay. I've got a tough assignment for you this evening. I want you to think back, way back, to your earliest childhood memories. I know this is difficult, because many people remember very little. But try. Do you recall your first or favorite stuffed toy when you were a child? It could have been a teddy bear or rabbit, clown, or Raggedy Ann. But you clung to it. If you don't remember, maybe your folks used to talk about that silly little object you dragged around as a tyke that gave you so much comfort. That's really why infants and toddlers glom on to the cute cuddlies we give them. For some reason, when young, we associate so much comfort and protection from soft, inanimate objects. Heck, for some kids, just the familiarity of a favorite blanket is the perfect stuffed toy. Then, magically one day, that icon of comfort that helped you sleep, absorbed your tears, and was always ready to be thrown out of the crib or across the room was rejected, abandoned, and worse, unwanted. That sounds so sad, doesn't it? Something so important, just cast aside. Or did we just find another stuffed toy? As we mature from babies to adults, we really don't discard our stuffed toys. We just change them. Fuzzy bunnies, bears, and unicorns take on new forms that give us comfort. Many times these cuddlies become compulsions. Food has become an addiction for many. The comfort of not being able to eat another bite is so alluring, and it's so personal. Only you and your freedom to indulge. Sex is a huge example for many. They never seem to get enough, and consequently, are never happy. Opulence is a giant stuffed toy. The desire to impress others with all your stuffed toy gadgets and high-end examples of wealth are little more than a child's blanket. Once you're an adult, the stuffed toys take on a myriad of shapes. Some are poured into a glass or frosty mug. You may have to show an ID for. Some come in a wide array of capsule and pill shapes. Some is rolled and smoked or put in a pipe. And some granules of stuffed toys go up your nose. And some oozes through a needle. How about you? Do you have a stuffed toy? I don't want to see it. I just want you to. Have a wonderful week, folks.
Excellent there. A twist on that story there, Lair. But my stuffed toy that I remembered first was Lassie.
You had a Lassie?
Yeah. You know, I had two, actually. Two Lassies. And they were my favorites. And then I had this Santa Claus stuffed toy that I actually still have. I haul him out at Christmas every year.
You're going to hate me. My favorite stuffed toy was the rifle from the Rifleman. I love that thing.
It wasn't a Pop-Tart. It was an actual rifle.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I had one of those, too. As a matter of fact,
I broke my F1, and my dad got me another one.
Yeah, one Christmas, I got the whole set. I got the holsters with the Devil Six guns.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
The rifle,
and the hat.
A vest and a hat.
Gotta have the hat.
Yep. Absolutely.
My toy was a Yogi Bear with, like, a plastic mouth and nose, except... Mm-hmm. The plastic got ripped off. So it was basically a Yogi Bear that looked like Hannibal Lecter. It had no mouth or facial features at all. But I loved that Yogi Bear. I took him everywhere. And my wife finally said, not on the honeymoon. Please leave it behind.
Mine was a Shamu.
A Shamu?
Yeah, we went to SeaWorld. We got
I'll tell you,
this guy.
Our friend Betsy was not going to like you when she hears that. She's not a fan of Shamu.
But I had sheets that looked like the ocean and everything, so it was
cool.
Waterbed?
Yes. No. That's the closest I got to a waterbed.
As long as they weren't stains.
Yeah,
that's why it looks like
so you know about my childhood then. Okay, forget it. Let's just move on.
Okay, all right. We're just about to wrap up the show tonight. We're going to leave you with another tune from Lloyd Marcus's great CD, God, Country, and Love, and you can find it at lloydmarcus.com. That's Lloyd with two L's, lloydmarcus.com. And tonight's song is called Sunrise. So we're going to leave you with that here in just a few minutes, which will give John Butler Book a little time. Actually, John, you want to come in here, maybe give us a little quick preview of your show?
Oh, yeah. Step in.
We'll get him to come on in here and give us a little quick preview of the show. Don't forget, folks, tune in to Carl Jackson every Saturday morning live at 8. And speaking of 8 o'clock, John's coming up at 8 o'clock on 950 WTLN. And don't forget to go to our website, AmericanAdversariesRadio.com, and become a member of the American Adversaries Army. Want to thank and congratulate those of you. We had a couple of new recruits over the last few days, and I certainly do appreciate that. John, how you doing tonight?
I'm doing fine.
Now, have to put the microphone in front of
you. Yes, you do.
Yeah. There. Okay. Now you're good.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah. You're good.
Yeah, it's my phone. That's what. Oh,
John, we just got a couple minutes left. What are you going to talk about tonight?
Well, you had a guest 2 weeks ago, which I thought was one of the most interesting and inspiring talk shows that I've ever heard. And the guest dealt with something called dialectical materialism.
Yep. We talked about
and how
about
it
that.
Relates to the brainwashing of our students in school and also our government and also the American people in getting us to accept a lot of things that otherwise we would reject, such as the war against the Muslims and the Muslims' war against us. I have him coming on the program. He's flying from Washington to St. Louis. He'll land at about 8:15. We hope to have him on the air at 8:30. And my monologue will basically set the framework for his presentation tonight.
And, of course, John is talking about Bill Federer, who we were talking about earlier in the show. We were talking about that dialectic. And so it will be a fascinating conversation, especially when you get two minds like John and Bill's together. So I definitely will be tuning in, and I hope you folks do too. And, of course, John's is a live show, just like ours, and he takes phone calls as well. And John's is also a brokered show, just like ours, folks, so he can use your help too. John, Carl, and we all need your help to help us continue doing these shows.
Amen.
And it's expensive doing talk radio. And so we could all use your help. And so please.
We're nonprofit, by the way. We don't plan it that way, but
it just happens.
Yeah, not by choice.
Yeah, I'm like John. I make a lot of money. I just can't use it.
No, I can't pass it.
I can't pass it, right. All right, but once again, John's coming up live here at 8 o'clock, so definitely do join us for that. Join him for that, I should say. And as I said, we're going to leave you with some Lloyd Marcus, God, Country, and Love. It's a great CD, and go to his website, lloydmarcus.com, to get that CD. It's a great gift. And Bill Federer, what's his website again, Nostradamus?
Well, he puts out an email called American Minute. So if you Google William Federer American Minute, he will send you an email every day that's got something about American history that you didn't know before you opened it up.
That's right. And he's the author of some 24 books, I believe. So they're all great books. I keep one with me. It's in my car right now. It's what every American should know about the Quran. And we really need to get on the ball, folks. We are losing the battle of ideas because we are remaining silent. We have to speak out. And we have to speak out forcefully, nicely, but forcefully. We cannot allow the liberals to carry the conversation the way they have for these past the past 100 years.
Yeah. And realize there are forces out there that we have to fight against.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. And John is a great fighter. And like I said, his show is coming up here in just a couple of minutes. So join us as we tune in to the John Butler Book Show on 950 WTLN. That's going to do it for us for tonight. Tune in tomorrow live at 5 for the American Adversaries Drive Time Show.
When I awaken before the sun, there's a feeling in the air that nothing can compare. And it boggles my mind, and I feel I'm the only one. And I thank the Lord that I've been given one more chance to make it right. All my worries are gone from the night before, and it's good to know they can't hurt anymore. Everything's gonna be alright at sunrise. At sunrise, things will be okay. Gone from the night before, and it's good to know they can't hurt anymore. Everything's gonna be all right at sunrise. So when your day is done and Murphy's Law has truly had the best of you, sometimes life is not kind. They say it's darkest before the dawn, so you've got to hang on in there and never give up till you see the light. As the clouds roll away to a bright new door, you'll see waves you never saw before. Everything's gonna be alright at sunrise. At sunrise, our things will be okay. And it's good to know they can't hurt anymore. Everything's gonna be alright at sunrise. From the night before, and it's good to know they can't hurt anymore. Everything is gonna be alright at sunrise. At sunrise, things will be okay. At sunrise, it's a brand new day. All my worries are gone from the night before, and it's good to know they can't hurt anymore. Everything's gonna be alright at sunrise. I know everything's gonna be alright.
It's gonna be alright
at sunrise.
AM 660, The Answer, WORL, Altamont Springs, Orlando. A service of Salem Communications. Intelligent, conservative. AM 660, The Answer.